And for some reason or another, the intro and the other audio elements have disappeared from my virtual cart machine, so we don't have any intro. It's just that it's, well, it's Friday. That much remained, but I have to reload all the other stuff because I don't know why. But anyway, this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes, and that, of course, is also where we keep all the access to all the podcasting. And just a gentle reminder, if you want the podcast of the program, then the best way to get it is at headon.live. Just go and find whichever platform you podcast from, and bang, there it'll be, right there for you. Works, as Brother Deacon Asa has pointed out, 100% of the time. Yes, and that's a wonderful thing. So headon.live for that, headon.live. If you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, a great augmentation to your live listening experience, if you're listening when the program is live during those 3 hours, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and around the great globe. Yeah, just pop on by, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump right in. You'll be greeted, for instance, this afternoon by Anatole and Roger in Oregon, and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has refrained from folding space, and it therefore is not man cave, because it's apparently about 152 million degrees in the man cave, even as we speak. Hotter than the interior of the sun. Yes. I, for one, have had an interesting day. It's there's rain in the forecast every day from now on, apparently. But every now and then the clouds will part. And so I've pitched a running battle with the rain, just trying to putter around in the yard and get a little sun and remain socially distant and all of that. I found something up at the Wiggling Pig today. I found that they've got this marvelous French brioche, I mean, from France and everything. I found a loaf of brioche raisin bread. Oh, dear me. So in between the raindrops, I fired up the griddle and melted some butter on it and toasted the brioche raisin bread and then smeared it with strawberry cream cheese. I'm told the grandbabies enjoyed it immensely. I know I did. Light and fluffy and just wonderful, little hint of cinnamon. For Agnes, I found chocolate swirl brioche, and little does she know, but that's going to get griddled in butter for her. Ooh. Another treat, I found hiding in the trunk of the car from all the way back in last January, the last can of Diet Grapico soda. Yes, wonderful stuff. And there was one can remaining, and I put it in the ice chest. It is just brutally, frigidly cold. And that's what this sound is. Yep, every bit as wonderful as I remembered. Better than Grape Crush, better than Knee High, better than... just better than anything. So I'm all set for Friday on the front porch. I hope you are as well. If you go over to headon.live, you'll find the great big button there at the top of the page. Click on it, and it will carry you immediately, virtually, over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary... ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday and some other days as well, depending on the needs of the moment. But head on over and be part of the conversation. At least I hope you will. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks are going out today to our 19th day of the month subscribers. And that would mean thanks to Sharon, Thank you, Sharon. Thank you very much indeed. The 19th of the month has officially become the loneliest subscriber day of the month, as far as I can tell, here at the Horn, with Sharon holding down the fort for the 19th all by herself. Thank you, Sharon. And so where do we find ourselves fundraising-wise as we are now two-thirds of the, or more, well, pretty much two-thirds of the way through the month of June? $615. In other words, we've got $15 to go to finish last Tuesday, and then $200 for Wednesday, Thursday, and, well, today. So it looks like we will be trying to work on a little Horn community-made miracle and in the coming 3 hours, and if anybody wants to help out overnight, what have you, that would be wonderful. But that's where we are. Lee in New York, under the subject line, rain every day, asking, how's the ark construction going? Well, I'm fresh out of gopher wood, and I couldn't measure a cubit if I had to. So, needless to say, the ark is not likely to be a reliable construction. Yes. And Lee pointing out, backups are always necessary when on planet technology. Or more importantly, planet technology fail. Mm-hmm. Steve in New York with an early note. Greetings and welcome. I just learned about Juneteenth from Donald Trump. I also learned that Lincoln signed a thing called the Emancipation Proclamation. Did you know this? What a stable genius he is. Well, Barn, what was the Emancipation Proclamation? The Emancipation Proclamation was a proclamation of emancipation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. True. Here's a little historical fun fact. I brought up brioche and Flavio, who, well, there's just not much Flavio doesn't know. And Flavio responds, qui mange de la brioche, which is what Marie Antoinette said. Why don't they eat brioche when told that they had no, that the poor had no bread? That gets rendered as, let them eat cake. Why don't they eat brioche? Mm-hmm. Sailor Chick saying, I like the intro music, Bob. Nice, smooth jazz. Yeah, well, I wasn't aware of any, but I'm glad you did. Or was that, could it possibly be sarcasm? Yeah. Let's see. A big thank you going out to Chris in Germany. A care package arrived today. We now swab our toilet here with a brush that fits in the empty cavern of the head of Donald J. Trump. Yeah. Now if we can just find some Trump toilet paper, well, he'll be exactly where he needs to be in our world. Along the way, though, also a pot of mustard. You know, remember when the wing nuts and the tea baggers and the birthers, deathers, baggers, bircher eaters, booger eaters, etc., had a conniption because they caught that one that was living in our White House and oh my God, despised America because he wore a tan suit, eating Grey Poupon or something like that. Well, this stuff puts Grey Poupon to shame. They've been in business, this particular house of mustard, since 1747, and we have a pot of it. And it's even refillable if you go to your local store, but I don't think I feel like flying to France right now. I think they've got a store in maybe New York. I'm not sure, but still, no. And oh, it's if you are an aficionado of mustard, it's fantastic. Oh yes, it is. And also a little tiny jar of truffle flavored honey. Ooh, I have a feeling that that's going to get a little bit of it smeared across some brioche, some toasted brioche off the griddle. Yes. So thank you, Chris. And thanks to Dave number 11, who informed me that we talked about this last week, some of Henry's olives from Humboldt County will be winging their way toward me. So I'll be heading over to the mailbox as quick as I assume that they arrived. And I'm told they are best eaten sooner rather than later. So yum, yum. Oh, yes, indeed. I can't wait. Because I have a feeling this is going to be a real olive experience. But it is Juneteenth. I found a white winger on Twitter who actually proudly broadcast his, I assume, stupidity, his idiocy, and said, "I'm 56 years old, and I eat and breathe politics, and I'd never heard Juneteenth till 2 weeks ago." Yeah, proudly declared that. Well, I can say that I have known about Juneteenth for considerably longer than that, but then again, I have an interest in as much of the history of this country as I can possibly digest. But I presume that most of us know. I know the community of color within the Horn Family Community Congregation knows what Juneteenth is. I know a bunch of the white allied community of the Horn Community Family Congregation knows what Juneteenth is. And I have one question that I cannot answer as regards Juneteenth, and it has to do with the overall the overall circumstances of its occurrence. Well, thank you, Steve. Steve in New York sending along a picture of that greasy headed old B movie actor, old 666 himself. Ronald Wilson Reagan wearing a tan suit. Yeah, but, you know, he was pale enough that it didn't seem quite so tan, I guess. Yes. Oh, my heavenly days, Suman. That's exquisite. We're starting with the food porn early. It's Friday, says Suman. So why not indulge in some food porn? I'm not vegetarian, but I try to stick to vegetarian for at least 4 days of the week. Here's a fantastic oven-roasted bell pepper stuffed with quinoa, beans, and corn, cooked with cumin, coriander, and garam masala, and cayenne pepper. I just took it out of the oven. Add some chicken if you like. Oh, I don't think it needs it. I'm not dogmatic in about my carnivorous ways. I don't have to have it all the time, and I think I could, looking at these photos, I think I could leave it be just fine. My God, that's exquisite. Yes, Lord, yes. And besides that, I love stuffed peppers, stuffed cabbage, stuffed grape leaves. Mmm, yum. Those are beautiful, Suman. And, you know, I love quinoa. I'm funny that way. Let's see, what else? Billable Rick says, Harriet Tubman, I just learned from Trump that a woman named Harriet Tubman is doing some tremendous things these days here in America. She ran something called the Underground Railroad. Trump and Crown Prince Jared,
I can't stand that dweeb,
are in the process of proposing an infrastructure plan to revitalize that railroad and so to siphon off a nice percentage of the profits from that infrastructure to go into the pockets of the Trump crime family. Yes, Harriet would be so pleased. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you. on this Juneteenth. An anonymous friend says, I'd like to put forth an anonymous $100 Judge Whitey White's challenge. Judge Whitey White, sarcasm, communities in from his gated home in the burbs to the downtown courthouse and pulls down $180,000 a year. It's a true challenge. I will match up to $100 plus the PayPal fee for anyone else's contributions up to 9 a.m. tomorrow to let the PayPal receipts roll in. So there we go. We can get us down from $615 to $415 if folks will jump in and get started on Judge Whitey White's challenge, courtesy of an anonymous friend of the program. Thank you very kindly. That's huge. It actually would get us down to 410 because Jeremy just got us down to 410 from 415. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. And that's how we get all of this done. So with that in mind, please let's not let a wonderful and kindly gestured challenge go to waste. And on the way toward my question about Juneteenth, note from Joey. Bob! About 6 weeks ago, Fox held an interview with Donald Trump on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and I do believe that I heard Abraham Lincoln convey these sentiments to Trump. Mr. Trump, sir, I am reticent to address you as Mr. President. I will attempt to be terse in my expressions, but will not mask my reflections of you. You, sir, exhibit no humility or appreciable decorum, even remotely indicative of a leader or president. Your obtuse nature renders you ignorant in a vast array of areas, but most poignantly to the significance and impact of being the president of this great nation. You, sir, are a thoughtless and arrogant in your approach to life and leadership. Mr. Trump, your capricious and reckless nature has threatened not only our democracy, but the future of this planet. You were AWOL during the Vietnam War, raising your children, and now during this pandemic. And frankly, you've been absent and absent-minded in your occupation of the White House. Sir, you have no knowledge of the constitutional foundation of this country and the principles of its operation. As President of the United States, I grieved daily over all the death and carnage during the Civil War. You, sir, have mocked the mayhem and trivialized the termination of life during this pandemic. All the while, your sociopathic son has reduced the deaths to a number and praised you for doing a good job. The significance of this day involves an addendum to my emancipation of the slaves as Union Army General Gordon Granger announced federal orders in Galveston, Texas on this day in 1865, proclaiming that all slaves held in Texas were then free. And you, Mr. Trump, have arranged for an engagement in the most liberal bastion of Texas, Austin, on Sunday, in attempts to obfuscate and confuse the farming community into believing your irresponsible trade machinations with foreign countries have been beneficial to their bountiful harvesting interests. Sir, why don't you remain home and be a father to your son on this Father's Day instead of playing the role of a reality show father to this country? As president during the perilous period of the Civil War, I engaged with alacrity and desperation to keep these great states united. And you, Donald Trump, by all accounts, have done everything in your limited constitutional power to tear this country apart at the seams. And by all accounts, my wife suffered from mental illness. However, she behaved like an adult and a highly functioning human being. You, Mr. Trump, are dysfunctional and totally toddler-esque. Is there a commonality between you and my wife? Not much. On the other hand, yes, my wife's name was Mary Todd, but you, sir, are a Mary Toddler. So please, Mr. Trump, stay off my lawn. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday, the 19th day of June, 2020, with Giraffe bleaching Trump's trail to the Lincoln Memorial. Thank you, Joey. That's a dandy. And it leads into my question with Joey filling in the details of General Granger's arrival in Galveston. The announcement made on June the 19th, 1865, was 2 years in coming. Also known as Proclamation 95, the Emancipation Proclamation was in fact an executive order. It was issued September 22, 1862, effective as of January 1, 1863. It was an act of war because it freed every enslaved human being inside the states, which at that time were in rebellion. For instance, it did not free slaves in Kentucky because Kentucky had nominally remained a part of the Union, as had Maryland. It freed every state, and it got a little confusing because it freed every slave inside Virginia, and West Virginia had not yet been created. So West Virginia entered the Union as a free state, because at the time that its mother state had been in rebellion, the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect. Which brings me to another point. Tomorrow is a holiday in the state of West Virginia. Today needs to be a national holiday all across the country. How it is not is a matter of national shame. It's a state holiday in more than 20 states and territories, but it is not a federal official holiday. Tomorrow is a holiday for West Virginia because it's Statehood Day. It is the anniversary of the day in 1863 when West Virginia entered the Union as a free state. So there's that. Now, here's where and it's not so much confusion, but it's just an observation trying to add to the quantum of understanding of this day. In a way, the Union was a victim of its own success, and that's how Juneteenth comes into being. I know that may sound strange, but I think you'll understand what I'm getting at in a moment. Because Grant and his armies and his subordinates had been so successful at bifurcating the Confederacy, you know, New Orleans fell, Vicksburg fell, and thereby the western part of the Confederacy, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, were all cut off from the rest of the Confederacy. Nothing moved east of the Mississippi from west of the Mississippi, because of the complete domination and control that the Union had over the Mississippi River and over those territories. The war hung on and ran on only in the Eastern theater, primarily between Virginia and down to Georgia. And when I say the Union was a victim of its own success, because there were skirmishes, but no massive battles west of the Mississippi after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, the word really didn't get that far along. And so it is that the news has to wait from January the 1st, 1863, to June the 19th, 1865, to be proclaimed in Texas because Texas had been isolated and, for all intents and purposes, neutered. And that's how it is that formerly enslaved people didn't find out until June the 19th, 1865, about the effects of the Emancipation Proclamation. But there's one more element that goes with it. And that is the fact that the information had to wait until it was read by a general arriving at Galveston, says something about the hateful, brutal, and repressive nature, as if we needed more evidence, of the Confederacy. Everyone, practically, east of the Mississippi knew about the Emancipation Proclamation, and in fact, it threw the Confederate government into frenzied paroxysms of outrage. Because, after all, they damned well knew what they were fighting for, and they were fighting to maintain the institution, the vicious, heinous, filthy, hateful institution of slavery. A few years later, some dolled up ladies of the Confederacy, with some aiders and abettors, would start the notion of the lost cause and would refuse to acknowledge that as the cause. So consider the brutality of the repression of this information in a place like Texas, where the information somehow managed to be kept from the enslaved population. That takes a lot of work, and that takes a lot of dedicated hatred for freedom of information. Maybe it explains the disdain for freedom of information that occurs unto this very day in Republican state government in Texas, where, you might recall, Governor Greg Abbott has and continues to suppress essential information about the spread of COVID-19. In, among other places, nursing homes in Texas. They'll grudgingly acknowledge that it's spreading, but they won't say where. Well, that's the same spirit that informed Texan government between January the 1st, 1863 and June the 19th, 1865. And so that's worth pondering in the larger universe of this holiday. As Flavio points out, it is a common misconception about Juneteenth that it marks the end of slavery in the United States. It did not. It marked the day that the enslaved people in Texas finally found out something that had been a matter of fact and law for more than 2 years. Slavery persisted in two border states after June 19, 1865, and remained in effect until ratification of the 13th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, and that took place on December 6, 1865. And even the language of the 13th Amendment remains problematic because it provided a fig leaf behind which Southern states and many others operate to this day. and that is that the 13th Amendment makes slavery illegal except as punishment for a crime. And that's how you wind up with the brutal schemes largely practiced in the South of using prison inmates as slave labor, but not just in the South, because, for instance, recall that, Mike Bloomberg was having robocalls made with slave labor coming out of Colorado, a women's prison in Colorado. And they happily purchased that slave labor during the brief moment in which someone, I still haven't met them, thought that it would be a really great thing to let Mike Bloomberg be the Democratic nominee for president this year. Yeah, no kidding. And thank you, by the way, to Jeremy, upping the ante a little bit and getting us $10 toward meeting the Judge Whitey White's challenge for this evening to help ease some of the fundraising hole that we're in. Thank you, Jeremy. $90 to go there, and then onward toward further community-made miracles here on this Juneteenth broadcast. Lee in New York, stop it, Bob. Most Americans do not know history. You know history. That knowledge amongst the American population is lacking. I can ask coworkers which war is the source for Veterans Day. It is seldom answered with the first guess. Trump probably believes that Harriet Tubman's Underground Railroad was the beginning of the New York City subway. The Horn community is aware of the past. The average American cannot find their own state on an unlabeled map. I'm pretty sure I could pass that test. An unlabeled map, label every state. Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Might get a little bit lost in a couple of details if that unlabeled map includes the outlines of a couple of territories. Like, say, Guam and the Northern Mariana Islands. But still, what Lee points out is absolutely true. We have lots of illiteracies in this country, and historical and geographic are two of them. So, and as far as the end of slavery goes, it persisted as well among the Indian tribes in the Oklahoma territory, in the Indian lands that became Oklahoma. So that Oklahoma became one of the last outposts of slavery in the United States. Because they had been allowed, you got to remember that the southeastern U.S. tribes were referred to as the civilized tribes because they had so eagerly taken to and adopted the white man's ways, including at the time chattel slavery. And they were allowed to take their slaves with them when Andrew Jackson committed his genocide against them that we now refer to as the Trail of Tears. And that was a different liberation altogether. Note coming from Steve in New York. Fuck John Bolton. Money's too tight for a challenge right now. However, I just wanted to say, fuck John Bolton. Yes, by all means. Well, I mean, not by all means. I wouldn't. I don't know many who would. But, yes. Figuratively, fuck John Bolton. Miserable, unpatriotic, anti-American, money-grubbing sack of dung. it matters not what is in his book, because when it was needed, it was not available. It's reminiscent of what Robert E. Lee actually is said to have remarked to General Jeb Stuart. Jeb Stuart was in charge of Lee's cavalry as they approached Gettysburg, and Stuart was notorious for going on rideabouts in which he would use his cavalry to steal stuff that Lee's army needed. And so Lee went into Gettysburg effectively cavalry blind. That's another one of those reasons that Lee was not the great general that he was touted to have been by the folks who created the Lost Cause. Smart generals try not to go into pitched battles in a state of, ignorance. And all through the 3 days of Gettysburg, Lee kept asking, "Has anyone heard anything from General Stuart?" "I have not heard anything from General Stuart. General A.P. Hill, have you heard anything from General Stuart?" "No, no, 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 sir, I haven't." How about you? Yeah, over there, General Pickett. Yeah, take a moment away from oiling your curly locks and tell me if you've heard from General Stuart." "Oh, well, no, 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 General Lee, I ain't heard nothing from General Stuart." Well, after Lee's loss at Gettysburg became a fait accompli, Jeb Stuart finally showed up. And said, "Looky here, General Lee, I done brought you a whole bunch of wagons." And they say that in withering tones, Lee turned to Jeb Stuart and said, "Sir, they are an impediment to me now." Just like that. An impediment. And John Bolton,
Yes, but buy my book. I was paid $2 million for it by Simon & Schuster, and I have many bad things to say about Donald Trump.
Porn stash, you weren't there when we needed you, and you are an impediment to us now, because there's nothing that can be done about what's in your fucking book. Yeah. And thank you to Gary. We are $65 away from Judge Whitey White's challenge. Thank you, Gary. Maybe in short order we'll have that knocked down. Much obliged and much help appreciated in taking that down and helping us qualify for that matching challenge. And by the way, just so we can sort of keep up with things, David in South Carolina, Stan, who does a very good job keeping up with the numbers every day, especially there in what has been referred to as the home of American sedition, South Carolina. Today, South Carolina announced 1,000 new cases of COVID-19 and 18 more deaths. Oddly enough, this has a terrifying relevance for me. As I may have mentioned, there is an individual who works up at the Wiggling Pig who was all excited because the family was going for their Myrtle Beach vacation, and they're off and gone now. And I mentioned last night that the health department in Preston County, West Virginia, has requested, but has no way of enforcing, a 14-day quarantine for anyone returning from Myrtle Beach, because Myrtle Beach, you might think of it as just a cesspool of COVID-19. And Preston County has has COVID-19 that has been brought back directly from Myrtle Beach. So there's every chance in the world that my little grocery store, of which I am so fond, and which tries so hard to bring things in that otherwise they wouldn't bother to just because I asked them to. I mean, they're wonderful folks. But there's every chance in the world that that little grocery store up the road is going to become a COVID-19 hotspot. And I like the people who work there. And I doubt the health department in this county will say so much as boo. So as terrifying as Walmart is and Kroger, well, I may have to eschew going to Wiggling Pig beginning about this time next week, because the individual was talking about being excited they were going to be gone for 9 days. One day down, one day back, and 7 glorious days swimming in the virus on the packed and crowded, plague-infested beaches of Myrtle, South Carolina. Some scary shit. Very. Thank you, Jude. Jude has gotten us down to $55 to go to finish off Judge Whitey White's challenge. Thank you, Jude. Thank you kindly. As far as South Carolina is concerned, David points out, guess what? McGovernor is leaning towards starting in-person public school in August. Of course he is. This is what Donald Trump wants. And they're talking about the very same thing in Texas. Because of course they are. No masks. Forget about social distancing. But we got to get the little ones back in school so they can get good and sick and bring the disease home to mommy and daddy and mamma and papa and great grandma and great grandpa, because freedom. It really does come with a whole lot of fucking anger, fury even. Oh, dear God, that's gross. So dinner has just been jeopardized in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Brother Deacon Asa saying, I'm officially pushing back against Billable Rick Esquire here, Bob. Say what you will about Jared, Billable Rick. The fact is, Jared has been successful in areas where Trump has fallen down on the job, most notably in wooing Ivanka. Pickett's charge. James in Illinois says it would have been a problem, Stewart or no Stewart. A frontal assault on the center. Bobby Lee was too infatuated with reading his own good reviews. He actually thought he could pull that one off. After he failed via Little Round Top and the flank of Cemetery Ridge. He didn't have many choices except to slink away, and at that point in time, he just said, well, to hell with it. We're just going to do this right here. It was military malpractice, frankly. Stewart would not have helped in that regard. He just made Lee go into it more or less blind. But Lee was no great general. It's more like he was a mediocre general up against early on even less great generals, but he met his match in George Gordon Meade at Gettysburg. As for the lost cause, Ron in Raleigh points out, The Lost Cause was written in 1866 by Edward A. Pollard. As you can tell by the date, Mr. Pollard wasted little time. Reckoning the War of Northern Aggression, which was fought for states' rights. Well, I mean, if states' rights is the states' right to, you know, own other people, sure. You know, that, but it really didn't catch on for about, it didn't get enough momentum and weight until, 1876 or so. And the election of Rutherford B. Hayes marks the end of Reconstruction and the end of a serious attempt on the part of the federal government to enforce its will upon states which, having surrendered, had transformed themselves into a violent insurgency and a guerrilla war. And thank you to James in Illinois for getting us down to $45 to go on that challenge. Thank you, James. That's tremendous. We can get there. Freight Train Frank has a question. Am I missing something? Lincoln died on April 15th, 1865. This date was over 2 months prior to Juneteenth, so African Americans were enslaved an additional 60 days of torment and mistreatment before they could breathe free in the USA. Not exactly. That's the whole point. It wasn't about Lincoln's life. The murder of Abraham Lincoln doesn't really play into this. Enslaved peoples in states in rebellion, and Texas was one of them, actually became free by operation of law, if not fact, on January the 1st, 1863, because that was the effective date of the Emancipation Proclamation. But that information was repressed by the brutality of Texas state and local government and vicious slave owners until they had no choice but to deal with it being read on June the 19th, 1865 in Galveston. And the Union General had to sail into Galveston in order to effect that. As opposed to, say, marching in from Louisiana or Arkansas or the Indian territories that became Oklahoma. There's a nuance of difference there. They didn't wait 60 days. They waited, let's see, 730 plus 761, 769, 789, 90, 820, 850, 881, 900 days. Enslaved people in Texas waited 900 days before they heard the good news of the Emancipation Proclamation. Give or take a day, because I'm liable to screw up any ciphering on the fly. Well, there's some... There's a new word for me. Art of word knowing. Retconning was actually what Ron and Raleigh meant. Revising an aspect of a fictional work retrospectively, typically by introducing a piece of new information that imposes a different interpretation on previously described events. Okay. That helps now. Okay, so it's 901 days, because there was a leap day in 1864. Thank you, Billable Rick. See what happens? I didn't take into account leap day. So it was 901 days, I think. subject to having my ciphering cross-checked. Yeah. Let's see here. I just put up the bat signal to get me space folded into the old holler tree so that we can get Friday on the front porch going. As to the vice president list, well, news came out today that I don't know if she was told she was out of the running or if she withdrew herself from the running, but that Amy Klobuchar, former county attorney of Hennepin County, Minnesota, that she was no longer in the running to be Joe Biden's VP. I'm not sure who's grieving over that. I haven't met any of those people either. And David in South Carolina, Stan, points out that rumor is that the list is down to Harris, Kamala Harris, Susan Rice, and Stacey Abrams. David says, I'm still betting on the Porter play. Namely, that Kamala Harris would be given the nod and Katie Porter would then hopefully become the junior senator from California. Well, I can, if that's the case, I can see how Val Demings is out, because if the burners had a purple polka-dotted blue scream and hissy, which they did during the primary process, shrieking, Kamala's a cop! Well, they'd probably shriek twice as loud, because Val Demings really was a cop. She was the chief of police of Orlando, and I read some things along the way that suggested that Orlando has had some long-term policing problems. So that would explain Val Demings not being on the list. And David says, rumor is that list is down to Harris, Rice, and Abrams. Jesus, I hope we're talking about Susan Rice and not Condoleezza. No, that'll put us all off of our kibble for the rest of the weekend. So, it should have been announced a long time ago, so that whoever was going to be the nominee could be out there on the stump, meaning two people. Taking a run at Nitwit Nero. Yeah, I was just funning. David says, "Yeah, Susan Rice." Well, she was in the Obama administration, and I can see why someone like Biden might be interested in having her. But there will be a hue and cry. Goddamn neoliberal establishment shill. Steve in New York says, I don't buy Val Demings is off the list. Choosing her would inoculate Biden from the they want to abolish the police garbage. But so too would that be the case with Amy Klobuchar. But apparently both women have police interactions that are less than stirring. And one of the things you don't want to do is invite the multimillionaire for-profit media, which have a talent for making mountains out of molehills, to give them something to focus on. To give the media but her emails to have to deal with. Okay. James in Illinois pointing out that Amy Klobuchar wrote an email or a tweet or something suggesting that the VP should be a woman of color. Okay. What's that, Jeremy? Jeremy says Gettysburg. Did someone say Gettysburg? That's a small part of Vermont pride right there. We soundly helped put boots to General Lee's traitorous dogs during those three bloody horrible hot days. Hashtag fucking traitors. Yep. And Vermont and Maine both. Because those three bloody days made the career of Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, who was present at Appomattox when the last Confederate flag flew, the white flag of surrender. Silent R. Lamar, you'll be hearing from Ron and Raleigh's counsel. Brother Bob, you left out the main part of emancipation. All men, all colored men were free and able to bear arms against Southerners in northern occupied territories. And that's true. In the aftermath of the Emancipation Proclamation, a flood tide of freed black men began swelling the ranks of the Union Army, which again, through the genteel Southerners, into paroxysms of white, and I do mean white hot fury. Well, it was downright unsporting letting the people we used to own take up arms and shoot at us. And I've read it here on this program in the past, and it's not a story out of Texas, so it's not perfectly attuned to Juneteenth. But it makes an excellent adjunct to the observation of the day. There is a very famous letter, now famous, that was authored in Ohio by a freed former slave, and it's known simply now, and you can find it on the internet, "To My Old Master." Because a vile, hateful old devil of a slave owner who lived not too far from Nashville, Tennessee, had written to one of his former slaves asking would he pretty please come back and work his farm for him. And the response he got was literally for the ages. Take a moment this Juneteenth and go and at your leisure, maybe not during the program, but afterward or what have you, go and look up "Letter to My Former Master." It will give you a thrill of pride. Well, it would give a thrill of pride to anybody who wasn't a shit-eating Southern sympathizer. They probably still sting a right smart bit. And so tomorrow, they will gather at the Bach Arena, as our pal Joy in Arbor pointed out. The goddess of irony was at work on that one. And the Bach Arena in Tulsa, you know, Bach as in bok, 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 as in chicken, as in coward, as in cadet bone spurs. Thousands of maggots will join in viral harmony in praise of their demented leader. Our pal Ken, as Sparky reminds us, tweeted, Tell me again why anyone would want to be in an indoor arena for 2 hours with 19,000 sweaty, screaming people in order to celebrate a man with dementia whose ignorance and negligence is killing thousands upon thousands of Americans while at the same time decimating the economy.
Well, because he's making America great again. And they want to be there for the greatening.
Fun word, that, the greatening. And they've been lining up as if this was, you know, a premiere of a Star Wars movie or something. Oh, God, the stupidity. Breathtaking. And there's been almost a festival atmosphere. It's a festival. I think this is a family. They're like some sort of maggoty proto half Osmond, half Duggars. I think there's a pair of twins involved because they're the ones wearing the pink maggot hats. And they were there to entertain the faithful. And they were all wearing matching Trump T-shirts so that they could everybody could identify them as Trump supporters once they got a good, healthy snootful of the Rona. Because a lot of people are going to get a good, healthy snootful of the Rona and then go out and spread it to decent people in Tulsa. Jesus. You might want to... You might want to get the hockey puck for this one.
Phew.
Just a second, I gotta. Sort out the login. Oh, and by the way, just so everybody knows, there are thunderstorms predicted for this area in the next couple of hours. So if the program should strangely disappear, and I haven't yelled snake, it will be because the rickety, antiquated, coal-fried power grid has maintained by Appalachian Power has gone to hell. Just in a little bit of advance notice. And so here they are, the maggot family. Like I said before, get the hockey puck. Come on, yeah, you just know that they can be heard on any given Sunday morning at some godforsaken megachurch in the greater Oklahoma area, all hopping up and down and hooting and yeah. Did you catch that line? Freedom won't come back if you give it away. Because, see, that's what you're going to do if you go out there voting for that Joe Biden and whatever negress that he decides to let be his vice presidential running mate. You're giving freedom away. You're just giving it away. Oh, my God. Of course, in about 2 weeks' time, Mom and Dad may well be dead of the Rona, because in the recirculated air of the Bok Center in Tulsa, virus particles are going to be a-flying. And people are begging. Sane people in Tulsa are begging for this not to happen. But those plague rat Christians will not be deterred from their appointed toxic mission. Because you see, they're members of a cult. Bill Barrick asking, in regard to the maggot rally tomorrow in Tulsa, how do you keep 20,000 screaming maggots in an indoor arena safe from the Rona? You don't, unless they're all washed by in the blood of the Lamb of God, the blood of Jesus, or a microscopic gun that can see the Rona and shoot freedom bullets at it. You know, the gun that Jim Baker sells along with his bucket pudding. Colloidal silver. Yeah. Some maggots should think about it. Silent R. Lamar says, I wonder, do the people who want America to hate understand that they're outnumbered and they're not the only ones with guns? You think they know that? Well, they may not. They may acknowledge that they're not the only ones with guns, but they know they've got a shit ton more than we do. And they think that they're willing to use them, but we're just a bunch of sissy panty wastes. I'm right there with you, Darlene. Darlene in Connecticut saying, I'm glad Amy's out. She's full of shit. She's not backing out to catapult a black woman to the VP. She just doesn't want to deal with the fallout of her record as Hennepin County attorney in Minnesota. Still hopeful for Val Demings, despite what you just relayed, Bob. The problems there may not have been her fault in any regard, and the for-profit media may tread carefully because she's a black woman. You're correct, though. Biden took too long to select someone. Again, his poor fucking judgment. I'm quite frankly sick to death of worrying how things are going to appear to the white wing. They've fucked everything up. People have died. The list goes on and on. I'm so sick of it. Screw them. They can do whatever the fuck they want, and nobody bats an eyelash. Pick Val Demings, and Dems need to just raise the sacred bird, the middle finger, to the Benghazi-style bullshit. Because they will do that kind of evil crap, no matter who the nominee is. I mean, they've got their book full of filth. They've got a book full of filth on Bernie. They've got a book full of filth on Elizabeth Warren. They've got a book full of filth on Amy Klobuchar. They've got a book full of filth on Kamala Harris. And people willing to amplify the Kamala's a cop message. I felt like Kamala Harris answered most of the questions, but there was one question she never answered to any satisfaction whatsoever that I was aware of. And on this Juneteenth, it's brutal to have to remember what that was. Every time I saw her ask the question about slave labor during her tenure as Attorney General of California, she studiously avoided the question. Because there's a courtroom record that goes with all of that. And it is troubling. I'm sorry, it just is. That's not me gooning on Kamala Harris. It's just, it is what it is. Billable Rick asking a question. Has Has Vegas placed odds on the percentage of maggots that'll be wearing masks at the Trump hate rally tomorrow? Just asking for a professional gambler friend. I don't think Vegas has taken odds on that. Because there's no way to get the money right. Because anyone wearing a mask into that rally, with the exception of the media, and the media will be hounded and tormented if they wear masks into that filthy arena. Anybody else who wears one will be set upon by other maggots and shamed into removing it and participating in their fucking death cult. Note from Glenn in San Diego, and then we're going to go to the old holler tree. First, a note from Elbert in Rhode Island. I'd like to see Trump answer the question, when do you consider to be the last time America was great on nationwide TV? Unfortunately, Elbert, that ship may have sailed, because that is no longer the campaign slogan. If you ask him now, when was America great, he'll say,
it started the day of my inauguration. My administration has made America great. Now what we have to do is keep America great.
See, we went from MAGA to CAG. Perhaps because MAGA has become so toxic, seeing as how it can be easily turned into a homonym like maggots. Yeah, damn it, there's the thunder. We'll cross our fingers. If we could knock out that last $45 of the challenge before Appalachian Power can do us in, that would be really helpful. And thanks to everybody who's gotten us down to $45. Thank you. Glenn in San Diego with a note. Black Lives Matter, thoughts from a white man. First of all, to be clear, I'm a white male boomer who's most probably not as woke as I should be or surely desire to be. I could never even dream or pretend to match the sincere and intelligent thoughts of Lady B or Tracy, nor the cogent repartee of my spirit neighbors Scott or Billable Rick or Todd, the rest of the wonderful contributors to the Horn community, and you, Bob, both the foundation and the beacon on the tower of the Head On Radio Network. Aw, shucks. All of whom I love, enjoy, and learn from every time I listen. So I'm just saying, anyone, no matter their color or heritage, who thinks that the Black Lives Matter movement should be left to the black population to deal with and work through is out of their freaking narcoleptic mind. I hold the same regard for those oblivious to the opportunity at hand who ask, what about the other oppressed people in this country? Their lives matter too, don't they? Why is it only about black lives? This is not a zero-sum game. The black American experience in this country is unique, but the problems rooted in that legacy belong to all Americans. Let's not dilute the power that is in the grasp of the Black Lives Movement at this moment by dragging out the should-have-drowned-in-the-bathtub when it was born platitude, all lives matter. All lives matter at this point in time is just a statement of white supremacy as far as I'm concerned. That's my editorial note. If we have an iota of desire for justice for all black people, then we all have an obligation to eagerly and zealously support and participate in the Black Lives Matter movement. No movement. Labor rights, voting rights, civil rights, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, and all the great and worthy social and political movements that ever were or ever will be successful have not been without the support and participation of the majority of the public as a whole. Great movements have been severely damaged and destroyed by the insidious poison of exclusion and division. Some examples. The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, who started out providing social assistance, education, and protection for their communities while seeking justice and equality for all people of color, were severely decimated and essentially destroyed by FBI infiltrators who pushed the organization to become a separatist black power and more violent movement, which only worked to weaken and alienate them from the general public, including many black Americans. Gloria Steinem took money from the CIA to bankroll her feminist rights movement, and has said that she would gladly do it again. Recall the big, fat, glossy Ms. magazine that carried not a single advertisement. I was always curious about that while flipping through and occasionally reading my female friend's copies. Of course, she was a partner to the CIA's plan to narrow the focus of the drive for the Equal Rights Amendment and cause division and separation both within and without the movement by discouraging male participation. Recall one of the better-known tropes born of that movement, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. To this day, we still do not have justice and equality for all black people in this country, nor do we have an Equal Rights Amendment. I consider myself a flawed but fierce anti-racist and feminist who is totally pissed off about that. People of all colors, let's not stay silent. Let's get off our butts and off the merry-go-rounds of amusing ourselves to death. As the late, great John Prine sang, blow up your TV, throw away your paper, eat a lot of peaches, try to find Jesus on your own. Even if you can't make it into the streets, please gather with your friends by any means available to you and lay out your principles for full display and encourage them to do as you are going to do. Bombard your representatives at every level with mail and calls from your school boards to your city, county, state, and federal representatives, and do it unceasingly. The importance of voting goes without saying. It's one necessary step on the journey. Beyond that, support in every way you can the candidates you feel will work for the movement. Use every means possible in your quivers of tactics and abilities to coax, wheedle, inveigle, and finally persuade them all to listen to the people, get off their privileged, unprincipled asses, and get to work on making this a just, equal, and better world for all black people. If we can begin to accomplish that, the rest of the greater good will follow. Damn, Glenn. That's cowbell worthy. Definitely. Baltimore Bob with an observation. The upcoming maggot rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma is a double dog whistle insult to black Americans, evoking the Tulsa massacre of what was known as Black Wall Street almost on Juneteenth. This is vintage Stephen Miller material. But it also looms as a physical threat to the city of Tulsa and points unknown. I'm speaking of the high probability that this will be a super spreader event of the COVID-19 virus. It's the latest edition of Trump's defiance of science. We chuckled nervously when he stared briefly into a solar eclipse. This is not that. On Saturday night, Trump will encourage his followers to involuntarily manslaughter a certain percentage of those in attendance, and soon anon, those not in attendance. A horror story by Baltimore's most famous writer, who was born in Boston, somewhat foretold this event. In The Mask of the Red Death, Edgar Allan Poe, oh, a literary reference. Good for you, Baltimore Bob. Edgar Allan Poe describes a gala gathering of social elites who carry on luxuriously within a walled abbey as a hideous plague ravages the countryside. Their attempt at social distancing proves ill-fated. It seems their lifelong aristocratic social distancing doomed them. But hey, at least they tried to avoid the plague. The sorry lot who will gather at the Tulsa rally will be there to defy the plague and mock the libs. To them, the plague symbolizes the unending fraud perpetrated by Democrats, fake news media, and pointy-headed intellectuals. So they will gleefully invite the specter who crashed Prince Prospero's party. Their chosen one will be there to reassure them they're safe, and so do not expect to see much personal protective equipment as they chortle, scream, sneeze, and spew their droplets throughout the indoor arena, and the arena will be packed, a fitting place for the mask of the Red State maskless. You guys bring a lot to the table. That's two fantastic notes. And both of them are spot on. Add to this the fact that it has already begun in Tulsa. An African-American man, having been shot dead by a white supremacist security guard at a hotel earlier today. He'd been thrown out of the hotel because he became angered that his car was vandalized. While yesterday, the guy who murdered him, but was only charged with manslaughter, was posting All Lives Matter posts on Facebook. He maced the victim and then gunned him down. And all he got was a manslaughter charge. Or in this case, as they probably pronounce it in Tulsa, man's laughter. And it's already begun insofar as Clorox Caligula has been posting threats against anyone who would dare to use their First Amendment rights to protest in Tulsa between now and his glorious fucking arrival, saying that they won't be protesters should be warned that they will not be treated like they were in New York and Minneapolis. That there's going to be some skull cracking going on. Jesus. Big thanks to our pal Nancy. Thank you, Nancy, so very much. Nancy took us down to 15 bucks to go, and then Greg, well, Greg just finished it all off. Thank you so kindly, Greg. And that takes us to, that finishes the challenge, taking us down to $415 to finish the week, and then knocked us down below 400 bucks to $340. Thank you, Greg. That's tremendous. Thank you so very much. So challenge met and $340 to go to finish this third week of June. Thank you so very much. We can keep this going. But only with your help. And thank you for the help you are providing. And now over to the old holler tree where Sparky is waiting in air-conditioned comfort. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
Sitting in air-conditioned comfort.
Who can complain, right?
Well, it's like 104 degrees in a man cave.
As I noted earlier earlier in the program, probably hotter than the interior of the sun. Or feels,
I don't know.
Like it.
Never been to the sun.
The man cave on a summer day is close enough for you.
Yes.
You know,
you can crack a sweat in 5 minutes inside that place.
Yeah, probably lose 15 or 20 pounds just by hanging out for a half an hour.
Oh, if you can do it. If there's no breeze, it's really tough. If there's a little breeze, you can do it. But I don't have no reason to be out there right now. No, it's only a couple hours of the day, and it's right about your showtime. There isn't a cloud in the sky here, so we were under a red flag warning yesterday. We had one fire in Red Bluff. Somebody set fire to an old Diamond National mill building that's south of town here.
Why? I mean, well, because idiots, right?
Why? Oh, it could have been some homeless people living there or something, because it's abandoned site, and it's right by the Sacramento River. It's easy to get to.
And am I mistaken, or it was yesterday when I played the clip of the woman calling the convenience store clerk Hitler, and that was said to have been in Arcata, California. Do I recall correctly hearing Roger mention Arcata?
Yes.
Okay. So it's the same place.
Yeah, I used to live near there.
Did you catch the clip last night?
refresh my memory.
An idiot, just an idiot woman accosting a Latina convenience store clerk and calling her Hitler because she asked her to wear a mask.
No, missed that.
Well, it's a state mandate now.
Statewide and coming to the defense of Governor Newsom was Arnold Schwarzenegger, who said anybody who doesn't understand the science and doesn't wear a mask when they're out is a moron.
Yeah, he did. He did a video a week or two ago.
Well, this was in response to Newsom's announcement yesterday.
Yeah, but you did a video with a mask on earlier. Plus, he got all his masks for the hospitals down there at one time—a million masks or something. Back, way back when. My little county's up to 31 cases right now.
Oh, damn!
Found out one person infected 10 people.
That's what that R number is about, reinfection.
But county health department's all over it because once they've been testing, I don't know, a couple hundred people a day. Once they found one person, then they say, give us a list, and they go out to the people that are on that list. They test them, and it's one person. They found 10 people that had it, so they're all in quarantine now.
So, Sparky, you think, is there a pretty good contact tracing mechanism in your county then?
Yeah, they're all, if you test positive, if you go in and get a test, or if you call your doctor or something, you're reported to the health department right off the bat. You can't even get into the hospital here without being authorized to go in there for some reason. No visitors.
Yeah.
Where did
only the person that has a doctor's appointment can go into the end of the building.
Yeah, my sister had surgery yesterday, and her husband couldn't go in there with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob, who is the crazy lady that you went on that long screed and then sang "God Bless America"? Who the hell was that?
That was a crazy lady in Ventura County, California.
She was at a council meeting or something, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Holy crap! Do we have
a big old poster board with all these pictures on it, and she was pointing to them each one.
I'm not a Muslim, and I'm not a terrorist. Yeah.
Holy shit! Is she running for anything?
No, just an idiot. And she brought, you know, she brought sound effects. She brought her own cowbell.
Oh yeah, the little bell. Yeah, right. Ring the bell, freedom, freedom.
Yeah, she probably protesting a county mandate or something, city mandate to wear a mask. Well, I'll be curious to see when next time I go to the grocery store if they have somebody at the door making people wear masks.
Well, I have here in my possession now, because I got into it with what was probably a bot earlier today, about spouting the anti-masking horse shit. But I now have a copy of what they're carrying around with them. And you know, this is all so derivative. It smacks of anti-vaxxing, but it also smacks of the sovereign citizen movement. Remember how the sovereign citizens carry these cards that say, "I are a sovereign citizen, even though I can't spell sovereign." Right? And I don't need no driver's license because I'm sovereign constitutional citizens in the Constitution. Well, I'm not kidding. Here it is, and it shows a person wearing a mask with a red circle and a slash across it. I am exempt from all regulation mandating face mask usage in public. Wearing a face mask poses a health risk to me. Under the ADA and HIPAA, I am not required to disclose my medical condition to anyone. Department of Justice ADA violation information line. Organizations and businesses can be fined up to $75,000 for the first ADA violation and $150,000 for any subsequent violation. ATTN government agents. Please provide lawful and necessary consideration to aid the BRRR in unimpeded exercise of constitutionally protected rights. Thank you for your understanding and assistance. There's not a word of truth anywhere in any of that.
That's when you break out the sign, no shirt, no shoes, no mask, no service.
Right.
No brains.
And
no, that's when you break out the sign that just says, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, hey, I saw another video of this gal going into a clothing store or something, and then they offered her a mask, and she said, I'm not wearing it. And they said, well, then you can go shop somewhere else. And then she kept arguing with them, and she was filming the manager who was wearing a mask. It says, company policy. And he's somewhere in Southern California.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Bill Rick.
Hey, I want to take bets on when the first anti-masking demonstration is going to be, let's say, in either Huntington Beach or Newport Beach or somewhere else in Orange County.
hasn't that already happened? Are you trying to rig the bet, Rick?
No, the anti-masking in relation to Newsom's order. Maybe they were out yesterday. I don't know. Who knows? Oh, I tell you, these people, it's like, I can't breathe. With a mask on. Yes, you can, you dumb fuck. In through the mouth, out through the nose. Or, yeah, they're mouth breathers, of course. Of course.
I got a little interesting backstory on that lady in Arcata.
Yeah?
I just went and watched a clip. It happened at a Shell Mini Mart on G Street. Interestingly enough, the father of one of my classmates used to be the owner, elementary school classmates, used to be the owner of that. Okay. Was called Bloxham's Shell. It then got changed to Bloxham and Sons Shell Station. And Dennis, the guy who, my classmate, has passed on the day-to-day operations to his son. The interesting point that I'd like to bring up, that son is the son of Dennis and his wife, who happens to be Filipino. So the ownership of that particular store is not a lily-white Anglo-Saxon Protestant MAGA. It is a mixed race, not as progressive Democrat as I am, but definitely not a right-winger. So I got a feeling that lady just might not be welcome in the store much longer. After the management of that particular establishment sees their video that got posted on Facebook, and it had to have been posted with the cooperation of the management because it was from surveillance video.
Yeah, it's a security cam video, right.
Yeah, and that has to come from the management. That doesn't come from some John Doe that hacked into a system. So anyhow, that was just a little backstory when I ran off and checked on it after you'd said something. And yes, I had seen it. I just didn't catch it from the program here. I caught it from another site. But just a little backstory. I happen to be we're friends on Facebook as well, of the historic owner of that particular market.
Well, and one of the things that occurred to me when you mentioned the ownership, just because, well, to paraphrase Yosemite Sam, maggots is so stupid. the woman that she was, those are often family operations, and the woman that she was accusing of being a Mexican, you probably illegal, and Hitler might have been a family member, and not even
could
remote,
very well,
and not could even very remotely well
be. I don't
Mexican.
Know the racial makeup of the families of Dennis's children. I only know Dennis, and I see him at class reunions and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it could have been the granddaughter of the guy I know.
Some seriously hateful people out there.
Oh yeah,
can we
they're everywhere, Bob.
Nope.
At the Corona Palooza, can we hand out some bumper stickers that say, I can feel the constipation running all through me?
Well, you know, if you're... yeah.
Okay, it's dinner in the Eastern time zone. Good job, Chris.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That one ain't on me.
Hey, Bob.
Everybody has to thank Chris.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Scott.
I sent you an email a little while ago to find out whether the people who own the venue in Tulsa have gotten a response yet from the Trump campaign. They had sent the campaign a letter either yesterday or day before yesterday requesting a written plan for social distancing that the campaign would be implementing at Saturday. Have they heard back yet? Does anyone know?
I haven't seen anything.
I know that.
It's actually Scott.
Nobody that works at that convention center is going to be working there tomorrow. They're going to just hand the keys to the Trump campaign and leave.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, you know, that presents lots of interesting insurance questions. Like, okay, I mean, just because the patrons, you know, sign a waiver saying they're not going to sue the Trump campaign, they could still go ahead and try to sue the venue, the owners of the venue. And are they going to be able to get indemnified by the Trump campaign? Not likely, because Trump never pays his debts anyway. You know, so it's
well,
really
shit. I would have asked for a check up front if they were going to use the venue to begin with.
Well, they're going to get a check up front. But as far as the liability for people who might get Corona as a result of that being at that rally.
Well, hold on, though. That brings up an issue that I was thinking about earlier today, and it requires the expertise of you and Steve, among others. As a matter of law, you cannot waive someone else's right. Are we all in agreement here?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
You can't.
So it does not matter if all the maggots sign those waivers as required by their cult leader. Because if they go out of the buck center,
mm-hmm,
and then spread it to someone else,
mm-hmm,
liability becomes transferable. Because there's no superseding or intervening causation here.
Mm-hmm.
And under theories of joint and several liability, the Trump campaign cannot be heard to claim immunity because some maggot signed a waiver and then went and got some innocent person sick.
That's true. You basically would have to show, as the plaintiff in that situation, that you got it from somebody who got it at the Trump rally.
Right. I don't think that's going to be very...
It's not that simple.
That's why
I saw an interview with a guy who was the first person in line there at that rally. They interviewed him on a Tulsa TV station. He had driven there all the way from Massachusetts.
Oh, God.
But that's why hospital-acquired infections are difficult to sue on, because you can't prove that you actually got it in the hospital.
No, it's not that simple. It's not that simple. Let me explain a couple scenarios. I used to defend torts. You know, there's two concepts. There's comparative negligence and contributory negligence. I always forget the bit where if you 1% liable,
Pure contributory negligence. Pure contributory negligence still obtains in some states, like Alabama.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I know, it is in New York too.
I used to do med mal defense, and the problem was proving that you actually caught it in the hospital rather than somewhere else. So there were very, very few suits on hospital-acquired infections, and I'm just assuming the same thing would apply to a venue like that.
No, but it's different, and here's why it would be different. Because in a hospital, because you have so many different types of infections, it would be hard to say. In a case, in just an arena, you could say, well, where else would you get it? The other thing too, like Bob said, is there's three things. First of all, if somebody were to, I mean, if one of the people, if one of the maggots left and somebody got infected, the person would have to sue the maggot, and then the maggot would have to sue the arena, and the maggot, or would sue the arena, and the maggot would also sue the Trump campaign. And again, I don't know what the law is in Oklahoma. There's certainly no contractual indemnity. Whether or not the contributory / comparative negligence, I don't know what the law is in Oklahoma, number two. And number three, so I don't know if all states have common law indemnification, meaning even though it's not contractual, even though there's no contract, the notion in the common law is, you know, you have to pay for your own liability whether or not there's a contract.
Well, hey, Steve, can you explain the difference, if there is one, between this situation and one where I get drunk in the bar, I'm overserved.
Okay, wait a minute. I didn't hear you.
Oh, I just wanted to know, can you explain the difference between the situation here with the COVID, spreading of the COVID that we're talking about, and me going to the bar, getting drunk, getting overserved knowingly by the bartender? I go out, I kill somebody, they sue me, but they can also sue the bartender, they can sue the establishment, correct? And I don't know who else they can sue, but maybe other parties, I'm not sure. But what, can you explain the difference there?
Well, if I may jump in a minute, Chris, a lot of states have what are called dram shop acts.
Dram shop laws, yeah.
And so statute will control in that situation.
Right. Because
and they
Chris,
can vary from state to state.
Yes.
Okay. Because Chris, under the common law, you can't sue the bar. So generally speaking, you can only sue. You know, in a tort, you only sue the actor.
You only sue the driver.
You can't even sue the bartender. No, you can sue the driver, and that's it.
Because the bartender would have an affirmative defense of respondeat superior, i.e. let the master respond. The bartender's actions are reflected upon the employer. But you couldn't even sue the employer.
But we're not talking about common law because almost
every state has some form of joint and several liability. Also known as sue them all and let God sort them out.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's the law.
That's how you get, I guess, God
is the jury in that instance, obviously.
Yeah. And that's exactly. And so, you know, that's how you wind up. That's why Steve's bringing up issues of comparative versus contributory negligence. And we are way deep into the weeds on this now. But sometimes I think this stuff is helpful. You have to understand that negligence theory is not, well, all when I walked into my torts class, I had a fantastic torts professor. He was a Marine, crusty, you know, just but funny as fuck. Torts professors are often funny people.
And they can also be demented.
Yes, but
mine was demented as hell.
He was a Marine, a skier, and just had a million stories. He was the god of torts in West Virginia. If he didn't know it, you didn't need to. And so you'd walk in, and he'd be standing there at the blackboard, puffing on a Marlboro Red, and he'd put his Marlboro Red out in the chalk tray of the of the blackboard. And somebody said, you know, smoking's not allowed in here, professor. And I really don't care. They're welcome to fire me. I'll have fun with that.
He sounds like Jack Nicholson's character in, you know, Code Red. Can't handle the truth.
Well, and so on the first day of torts, he gives us a phrase, and what he did every year, probably a little sexist, he would pick out the prettiest girl in 1L in that class, and it would be the prettiest girl who had already lined up a summer clerking job for the great big evil defense firm in the state, and her job would be to say three words: "We don't pay." So every time he would be briefing a case before the class, he'd say, "And the insurance company says," and up in the corner, she knew she had to be there every day because she was the "we don't pay" person. She'd say, "We don't pay." Right. But the other thing is, on that first day of torts, one phrase going all the way back to Mary Oldie Engelland: all liability is based on fault. Six words. And where torts are concerned, for the most part, that's absolutely true, unless it's strict. There's some element of strict liability or lesser crimes, lesser torts. You got to prove liability in order to establish fault. And you know, yep. So the explanation. He started telling us about the two King's Archer bowmen, who were or soldiers or whatever, and they were practicing, and one of them slashed the arm of the other accidentally. And went before the court of Mary Oldie Engelland, ye olde King's Bench, and the guy who did the slashing said, "But, my lord, I didn't mean to." And the principle gets established that the king's other soldier is wounded, perhaps maimed, and it doesn't matter what your intent was, it is the fact that you did it, and you are at fault. And that applies to this day all the way down to fucking rear-ender car wrecks. All liability is based on fault. And so from that, you develop, there develops concepts of negligence. And from concepts of negligence, develop questions of how to assign negligence, because there is no perfect plaintiff. And because the law, historically, was developed for the people who had the money against the people who had none, and because injured plaintiffs are quite often the people who have none, and the people who have the money are quite often the defendants, there arose the pernicious concept known as contributory negligence. And the pure form of contributory negligence says that if the jury finds that the plaintiff is even 1/1,000,000 of 1% responsible for his own harm, the entire claim fails.
And thus, we don't pay.
And therefore, and she stands up and says, "We don't pay."
Yeah, but all right.
Wait, because we're not done.
Yeah, okay.
That was so evil and so pernicious that the next doctrine that develops is called comparative negligence, in which you do basic math. Let's say the plaintiff is 45% negligent, but the defendant is 55% negligent. Well, in that case, the plaintiff will collect the 55% worth of the verdict. You'll take the verdict, multiply it by 55%, and that's the check that the plaintiff gets.
Okay.
But if the then you get into a situation where it's hybridized, where if the plaintiff's own negligence goes over 50%, then you're back at "you fucking lose."
Right. Now, Bob, if I'm not mistaken, I think the theory of comparative negligence was begun by the California Supreme Court I believe, under Chief Justice Roger Traynor, if I'm not mistaken.
I won't fight you on that.
Yeah, just a little trivia there, because I know California used to be in the vanguard of things legally until it got a bunch of conservative Republican justices appointed, like in the 1980s. But now it's kind of switching back to where it was before. But yeah, they were very progressive.
Well, and unless it's changed, for instance, Alabama still has pure contributory negligence. And yet, oddly enough, Alabama is a plaintiff's paradise.
Huh.
Because the plaintiff's lawyer will stand there. He or she will get their contributory negligence instruction to the jury and then sit there and beat them over the head with it like a 2x4 saying, if you find this guy. And so the jury, meanwhile, sitting there going, right, we've got it. We feel sorry for your client. And we don't want to fuck them, so we're going to find those other assholes 100% liable.
Right, good.
And then they hand the pencil to the jury foreperson, who draws the number one and starts writing zeros until their wrist cramps.
Good.
There's another doctrine, and I'm not trying to filibuster this thing, but it there's no short way to explain these things. There's another doctrine out there called joint and several liability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I referred to a few minutes ago as sue them all and let God sort them out.
Right.
And so if I, and let's use COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say somebody I love gets the Rona because they got smollocked on by an asshole who wouldn't wear a mask and was in the local Stop and Shop. Well, a good plaintiff's lawyer is gonna sue the suspected person, sue the Stop and Shop, sue the Trump campaign. Sue the management of the arena, and conceivably, John Doe as defendants, every individual who attended that fucking thing, because somebody obviously brought it in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you're
gonna. I mean, it seems to me that it's negligence. It's gross negligence on part of the Trump campaign to hold this fucking
willful
thing.
Wanton and reckless conduct.
Thank you. There you go.
And see, this is another
better than I could say it.
This is another one of those wrinkles, because there are some things that the law holds to be, and the language we have here in West Virginia is inherently dangerous and ultra hazardous.
Mm-hmm.
Blasting comes to mind. Except that you can't use it against a coal company in the case of mountaintop removal. Don't ask.
Yeah, you've tried that, I'm sure.
Public policy.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to my question, though.
Wait.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, these things aren't easy. And they're long and tortured trails. So, one might argue in one count of the complaint that the Trump campaign engaged in inherently dangerous, ultra-hazardous activity in holding this Corona Palooza during a pandemic when there was, and it's just notice pleading, an abundance of scientific evidence to a reasonable degree of epidemiological certainty that the disease would be spread by this thing. Okay? So, you complain. Everybody you've sued has to answer or run the risk of getting default judgment against them.
Mm.
So, you've got summons and complaint. You've got to answer. The answer will probably be served with if they've got, like, the model rules of civil procedure or whatever. It'll start out with there'll be a raft of motions, failure of jurisdiction, failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted, failure of service, and they will boilerplate plead every one of those Rule 12B motions to dismiss. And some, most of them will probably not be granted. The objection will be preserved for the record. And then we move on to discovery. And after discovery, you get to the motion for summary judgment. Those in everything except like libel and slander, defamation, those are hard to win. And so if the thing goes to a jury, then the jury will be instructed that they can sit there and assign degrees of liability. But here's the fun part. It's sue them all and let God sort them out. But once the plaintiff has their judgment, they can collect that judgment from any given defendant, and the other defendants, and that defendant that has to pay then has to turn around and get the percentages out of the hides of their co-defendants.
Mm-hmm.
And I mention all of this simply because, as we saw this week with the rebuke that old Balls and Strikes and the rest of the gang gave him over DACA, they didn't say that it was illegal for him to kill DACA. I mean, a Republican's not going to say that, for fuck's sake. No. They basically wrote an opinion, the Supreme Court did, saying, you have some of the most shitty lawyers that we have ever seen come before the bar of this court. Where the fuck did you get your law degree? Did you draw the parrot and send in the matchbook? Is that how you got your law degree? Because it sure seems like it.
I think they all went to Stephen University, Bob.
They went to Trump University.
No.
Or that shitty college where W got all the his appointments on the federal court.
Patrick Henry
Kansas
Law School.
Liberty.
No. The Patrick Henry School of Law.
My God.
Jeez.
I mean, that's one step below the Draw Spunky School of Law.
Cracker Jack has a better prize in it than the degree.
But I thought it would be good to go into all of that because there is a liability nightmare. And it's not, you know, it's not just a nightmare for this particular rally. One of the reasons that that Moscow Mitch won't allow another wave of relief to go through is because he wants an immunity bill for every negligent business that has opened thus far and will yet open and cause the disease to spread.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless the business has changed a lot, there are some really, really good, high-powered plaintiffs' law firms out there that have the wherewithal to mount suits like that and absolutely devastate any number of businesses and, by extension, a shit ton of insurance companies.
Oh, this is like a paradise for plaintiffs' attorneys, this whole COVID stuff, all these issues.
It'll be all over it, Bob.
Yeah, I thought about recommending my boss that we go into that, but he sort of nixed the idea. Stick to tax, I think.
Well, you dance with her what brung you.
Right. Exactly.
But and I'm sure the firms already exist. It's funny, if you drive around Alabama, I was talking about what a plaintiff's paradise it is. I don't care where you are in Alabama, you cannot drive 5 minutes without seeing a billboard for a cat named Alex Shunra. He's everywhere. And he's a mill. And rumor has it he has never tried a case in his life.
Oh, jeez.
He just gets the cases in the door, churns them, and sends them out to people who know how to do it. And the Alabama State Bar has a fairly gentle approach to something called fee splitting.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll bring it in the door, send it off to another lawyer, and get 50% of the cut.
Well, that's nice work, Bob. Jeez. I could really improve my golf game if I had a job like that.
That's like mafia cut.
Well, and what he's getting is 50% of 33 and a third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
That's, for hardly any work, just bringing the client in and referring it out to the.
That's one of those truisms that can withstand scrutiny anywhere in the universe. All lawyers can divide any number on Earth by three.
Right.
Love that.
So okay. this guy's an empty suit then, Bob.
No, I think there's potential teeth to this that are really sharp and pointy. Yeah, Scott, you've waited patiently. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get to the end.
No, that's all right. I appreciate your walking us through it because you know how these things, the whys and the wherefores and the salient points that are going to be, commonly spoken of in the days and months ahead. My question is, if the Trump campaign doesn't respond to the request of the venue for a written out social distancing plan during the rally, are they trying to give themselves an out? That if all of this does come up to bite them legally, they could say, well, we asked him for how they were going to maintain social distancing, and we never heard back.
Well, if I'm plaintiff's counsel, and I'm trying to make sure everybody stays in the game, then I'm going to respond by saying, listen, you asked them for it, you did not demand it of them, and you let it go forward knowing full well that it was an inherently dangerous, ultra-hazardous activity. And you're gonna repeat that phrase over and over and over and over and over and over again, because those are, we've talked in the past about magic law words.
Yeah.
Well, inherently dangerous, ultra hazardous activity is a really special magic law spell. Because once you've established that it's inherently dangerous and ultra hazardous, it imposes that magic law spell conjures a very special law genie. And the very special law genie says, behold, plaintiff need not prove negligence. Thou art strictly fucking liable, dickhead.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an admission as well by the venue that this is an ultra-hazardous activity for which they were trying to get...
Are you beginning to get a little interested, Rick? Are you beginning to get a little curious?
Well, the thing that I don't get...
Give your boss this podcast, Rick.
What's that?
Give your boss this podcast, Rick.
Oh, there you go.
Rick, the thing that I'm mystified by, the venue essentially handing over the keys and none of their people are going to be on the premises on Saturday. It's like, will there be like concessions or are they closed up too?
It'll be like a dead show. The only concessions will be the concessions the maggots bring. They'll be out in the parking lot grilling chicken on a stick. It'll holding up signs saying need a miracle.
So I imagine there'll be some oxy dealers there handing out tasty pills for all the patrons there, right?
Free hydroxychloroquine for everybody. We've got 30 million pills.
I'm assuming this is going to be on TV. I may have to watch this just for the entertainment value of why, it's like a nature show.
Yeah, I want to see what
Marlon
happened.
Perkins in the bush camera, and we've approached
or Jane Goodall studying the chimpanzees, in other words, the maggots.
Yeah, let us now watch them in their natural habitat.
Wait
a minute. While you're watching
Richard Attenborough,
while you're watching the show, think about a Super Bowl game played up north where the football team has gotten back into the offensive huddle or the defense, but usually the offensive huddle, and they've been running around hard, and that cloud of condensation rises from the huddle and floats onto the area of the field that comes that offensive huddle, and think about every those little drops of steam that you're rising above, carrying a sufficient amount of virus to infect anybody that cloud happens to pass under.
You know,
like
what's
the defensive player on the next play.
You know what's right. You know what's even an even better example, Roger? The Super Bowl itself.
Yes, I heard the story, Bob. Go ahead.
When they do the indoor fireworks, and it's all over with, and they turn the lights on, and the whole building is full of smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the virus. Now I gotta backtrack real quick because Flavio missed the front end of all of this. Flavio says, but Trump's having everybody sign a hold harmless. Doesn't that let him off the hook? No.
Mm-mm.
Because the people signing it can only hold the Trump organization or the Trump campaign harmless. They cannot waive the rights of the person they transmit the virus to outside the venue.
Right. Uh-huh. Right.
They cannot waive and the Trump campaign cannot seek to waive the rights of a non-participating third party.
Hey, since we were talking about the Super Bowl, can I just quickly tell you about a news story I read about where the, I think a medical professional or somebody basically said it's a damn good thing Kansas City won that game. You know, even though it looked like San Francisco had it in the bag at the start of the fourth quarter, but right, then they let off the throttle and Kansas City came back. The reason that saved, that may have saved hundreds of lives, if not thousands, of San Franciscans, because if the 49ers had won the Super Bowl, then there would have been a parade in San Francisco at the same time the coronavirus was getting its legs in San Francisco. So I found that very ironic how that just, you know, the Kansas City victory may have saved thousands of lives by having the victory parade in Kansas City, not San Francisco.
That's very interesting, right?
So the goddess is very busy that day, apparently. Goddess of
Iron. I want to go back to Roger's visual there. What a beautiful visual you painted, Roger. The only thing I could think of was the purple people eaters and that breath coming out of their mouths in Minnesota. Oh,
yes, as accompanied by a John Facenda voiceover.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Roger, that was a beautiful
visual. On an early
display. All you have to think about is the ice bowl.
Yeah. Right. But you know, you got the music.
Yes.
And you got John Facenda on an early December day on the frozen tundra of Green Bay, Wisconsin. A group of marauding Vikings sailed into the bay to meet the meatpacking maniacs. And hell, I just gave myself goosebumps. I mean, but yeah, particles, droplets. Yeah, but it's.
Well, the reason I brought up the football huddle number is because so much of this is about wear your mask in case you cough or sneeze or something of that sort. It's not just what comes out from a cough or a sneeze. It's any fucking breath exhales moisture particles from the evaporation in your lungs. So the mere fact
science
of breathing does it.
Yeah. Well, and I guess this is going to be kind of a fun with law sort of thing. You know, we've talked so often about how, you know, prior restraints and you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, right? Well, can you yell he's coughing in a crowded Trump rally?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Oh,
because if I don't care if I worked for one of these outlets that was running the pool cameras, because this will be a pool feed. You'll probably have some individual reporters in there, but if I'm in there, I'm not going in there with anything less than a goddamned Apollo 11 spacesuit.
No kidding.
Yeah, shopping at the NASA surplus store.
Yeah, and the thing is, and if I was the producer, I would say, I want camera. The first time you hear a fucking cough, I want a camera on that motherfucker. I want cameras on every.
Them, right?
I want cameras on every human being that coughs in this building.
God.
Well, they'll probably have little. What are those things that fly? Those drones.
No, drones won't be allowed.
Inside?
No.
Maybe.
Well, somehow up above.
Service wouldn't allow it.
Somehow up above, there's got to be a cough cam.
A cough cam. There you go. Hey, congratulations. You're on the cough cam. Smile now. Spread all the particles.
God, I'm so glad to be here. God bless Trump.
What we're finding out is singing is the most deadly act of them all.
Singing and sneezing.
They're going to have singers.
Well, they're going to be singing in Greenwood, I would assume. Yeah.
Oh, those sweet little girls that were singing out front are probably carriers.
Right, and you know why that none of the people who work there are going to be there? Because the proprietors cannot force them to be there.
Right.
It's Oklahoma, so I doubt they got a union. But they cannot be forced to be there. Meanwhile, I just got a note from Cynthia, who said, I hope Trump gets all his maskless trumpansies chanting and screaming loudly, lock her up or whatever. Doesn't matter. Just get all the spittle droplets flying butt good. Okay, I'm a terrible person. Bad me.
Well,
it's hard to resist that.
But then you have to lock
the rally's going to happen anyway. That's the problem. So we might as well wish malevolent things while we're at it as to the maggots inside there. But yeah, the problem is the other people who aren't at the rally. They're the ones that are going to be the ultimate victims.
Can't let the fuckers out of there.
In spite of a lawsuit against Trump, you know?
I want to see if the press, how much of the press actually shows up there to cover it.
They'll probably have their N95 masks if they do show up. They're not going to just have a regular face covering. Yeah.
Oh, and Darcy's come up with a name for it. Cough cam. Oh, my God. I love it. Cough cam.
There you go. How about a cowbell? We haven't had too many today, Bob.
That's two. Really? One for Cynthia and one for Darcy.
I just not told you
there's nothing.
Constitution, huh?
What?
There's nothing malevolent about speculating on all of these obvious things that will happen as a matter of course because somebody along the way kicked the ball, got the ball going, and it's going to snowball. It's the natural result of what happens when you engage in irresponsible behavior.
And meanwhile, because it's just so goddamn much fun, let's travel down right now to the Crossroads Trading Consignment Store in Costa Mesa, Orange County, California, where a mask requirement is still in place. Shall we do let's?
Yeah. I'm just going to fill out the form for you. So if you want to put your ID and everything on the counter.
Answer a mask.
I just want to shop. I don't want to sell.
Do you have that face mask?
No, I have a health condition. I can't wear one.
Okay, then unfortunately you can't shop.
We can't turn down service for that reason. I have plenty of documentation.
I'm so sorry about that.
I have you on video for the law, though. No, it isn't.
Yes, it
it's
is.
Not a law.
It's
and I'm
in a store. I'll we're take... allowed to enforce oh? that for the safety of our employees.
Not for health reasons. You can't, though.
Yes, we
no,
can.
Not yes, for that
can.
Reason.
If you would like to talk,
okay, so this is Crossroads in Costa Mesa. Can I get your name?
My name's Kelly Hines.
Kelly. Okay, yep. Awesome. So they're telling me I cannot be a customer in here because of my health condition.
Not at all.
And they're refusing.
You can be a customer if you wear a mask.
That harms my health condition to wear a mask.
No, it
and
doesn't.
You're telling
well,
me that you're turning down my service.
That?
I have the ADD. I have the ADA here with me. I have the ADA with me. And you're wrong.
It's for the safety of our customers?
They have masks on. And I'm 10 feet,
and
6 feet away. Yeah. So I have the phone number and everything for violations.
Our priority for the safety of our employees. And that's why we were fired.
Well, you're breaking the law, and that's fine.
Okay.
So
if you want a mask, we will give you one.
No.
That's she went to the Google School of Law.
So thank you. And you're the manager?
I'm a HUD manager.
She wants a video. She doesn't want a mask. Okay.
Perfect.
She's a Pink Floyd fan.
Yeah.
Costa
Mesa
That's
the one I was telling you about,
Sheep.
Bob.
Yeah.
Want to make sure that nobody can walk in without wearing a mask when there's really no fucking virus even affecting anyone.
There's no virus.
Oh, my God, she's so fucking intelligent. I can't believe it. Oh, geez. You know, since she's when Orange County did, a bad name, along with a lot of other assholes.
When did being an asshole become a medical condition? Did I miss the memo?
Oh, no.
Well,
it's another brick in the head. Yeah.
I think they go to their proctologist, Scotty, for these issues. You know, at least they should, rather than go to the store if it's such a major issue for them, you know? Jeez.
The person who in Red Bluff here infected 10 people was asymptomatic. No symptoms, just went in for a test.
Right. See, it's a real thing. People are ignoring this at their peril, and this thing is going to just, you know, it's going to go into hyperdrive here in a couple of months.
Out of 19,000 people, how many people are asymptomatic in there? Probably a bunch.
Probably 100 or more.
Sure.
Probably 100.
Asymptomatic because they won't show temperatures either, so they won't be identified when they walk in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you raise a good point about the temperatures. I was amazed that they're going to be at least taking the temperatures of the attendees. But since Trump supporters are such babies, they're using rectal thermometers, so it should be something to watch.
No, they use the forehead thermometer. They got to go through a magnetometer anyway to get in there, so they'll shoot them as soon as they go through a magnetometer.
Oh, devoutly to be wished.
Two things. Do you think if somebody's temperature is too high, what do you think is going to happen? Nothing. You think they're going to actually turn anybody away?
No, the
thermometer. Of course not.
The thermometer will always read normal.
Yeah.
In fact, it'll probably just have a little sticker on it. It'll be like it'll be like a toy phaser.
You know what occurs to me about all these fucking weirdos who, like the woman you just, these are the people who don't see any problem with somebody saying, "I don't want to bake your wedding cake because you're a quar."
You want to spell that, Steve?
A quar. I don't know.
Is that some alien life form or something from Star Trek, Steve? Or what?
That's K-Q-W-U-O-R. Quar.
Hey, guys. I was just wondering that if they're showing up to the Trump rally and they're taking temperatures, and I imagine that they'll reject anybody that's going to go in with a temperature. But the question is, being that there's already thousands there, and if they are infected, doesn't it already defeat the purpose of taking a temperature?
Well, like I said, Lloyd,
asymptomatic.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to matter. I think it's going to be a toy thermometer.
You're good. Well, I got this medical condition, and my normal temperature is 102.5.
Oh, there you go.
It's against the ADA and the HIPAA. You got to let me in.
See, I recently arrived from...
Right, it's my constitutional right.
I got an
ADA certificate that says so. I'm sorry I left it home, but God damn it, I got a right to come in here.
I love Trump.
So if it does lead to do you think it will hurt Trump? Do you think it will rebound in the press and elsewhere?
Not in a place like Oklahoma.
Not amongst the maggots. They don't care what he does. He could shoot people on Fifth Avenue. Nobody would care, Lloyd.
And you know the other thing, Bob?
What's that?
Here's something nefarious about the thermometers. Then he can say, "Hey, we told you what your temperature was, and you came in here anyway. You assume the risk."
Oh, hell, unless they're bleeding from all orifices, come on in. Grab a hat. Sit down. Get a good seat.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Bob, I did go to sleep, actually, finally.
Good on you.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Tracy, how you doing?
Well, I pulled my first all-nighter in about 20 years. I don't recommend that shit. It ain't fun.
How do you stay awake? Coffee or just willpower?
Both.
Okay.
Red Bull.
For school?
Oh, there you go.
No, yeah, for school. I don't do Red Bull, and it wasn't. And I was doing iced coffee. Jan just bought a new coffee machine, coffee maker that grinds the beans right into the pot. So that was at about, Bob, what time did I talk to you? Your time, it was 7 something your time.
Yep.
So like 4 something this morning, my time, I had a test. And then I finished the paper. Oh, and my teacher loved the alliteration of the, condom wrap, the thorn wrap condom, alliteration. I got an A on that paper, that part. So yeah. Because she already graded it. So, I was running. And then I couldn't go to sleep right away, of course, because when you're really tired, you can't sleep right away. So I did laundry. I cleaned the bathroom. I cleaned the living room and all that in my room. And then I went to sleep. So I just woke up about an hour ago. And I'm in the car. I went to go get new insoles for my running shoes. And now I'm on my way. Now I'm going to make dinner tomorrow. We're doing a prime rib roast. Three bone roast, steady rib roast. I'm going to make a
nice.
I'm going to do cream spinach and mashed potatoes for the sides. That part.
Yummy.
Oh, happy Juneteenth, everybody.
Yes, Tracy, happy Juneteenth. Exactly.
And by the way,
hey, Tracy, congratulations on the A.
We're not free. I'm just loose. That's all.
Congratulations.
Cook that roast low and slow.
That's what we're going to do. What, baby? What? Who's talking to me? What?
That was Roger.
Cook the roast low and slow.
Low and slow.
That's Roger.
I'm putting the sucker in at noon tomorrow, and then I'm letting it cook all day.
Yeah, nothing higher than 200 degrees.
Yep, that's it. Exactly.
You got a meat. You got a probe meat thermometer. You can leave in it the whole time.
Yeah, it's really cool. You put it in, and then it's digital, and it cooks. And so it's magnetic. So you put it in on the inside, and the magnetic part is on the outside. So you don't have to open the oven to check the temperature. Holy shit, Bob! I think I just saw your. I might be running into Vons because somebody just walked out with a 3-ply toilet paper, and I promised you.
I got it.
Did I not promise?
I got it. I just need a picture of the package, Tracy. I just got to know.
It's on my Facebook page.
Okay, I'll go find it. I just got to know what I'm looking for.
It's Northern 3-ply. It's in the purple package.
Okay. I'll be on it.
Never heard of 3-ply paper before.
Oh. Man, let me tell you.
That's some seriously bougie paper. That's some bougie paper.
That's some.
I had never heard of such a thing until Jan and I got together, and I'll never forget it. I thought I was pissing in high cotton just getting the 2-ply.
You could get so comfortable you can almost sleep on the stuff, right, Tracy?
I'm telling you. I mean, that shit was softer than the sheets that I grew up sleeping on. You know,
the trick is to put it away and only use it for yourself. Make sure your visitors don't use it.
The company don't get the 3-ply. Well, when Bob comes to visit, he gets the 3-ply toilet paper.
And Agnes,
but maybe not Bob. Definitely Agnes. Agnes gets the 3-ply toilet paper.
Oh, so Randy and PA just let me know it's available through Amazon. So I, since I'm going to have to cut down on another grocery store I go to, because Myrtle Beach, I may just have to order it from Amazon.
What about Myrtle Beach? What did I miss? What's happening? Why does Myrtle Beach have to do with anything with you when you're in Virginia, West Virginia?
Because one of the workers at the Wiggling Pig is gone for a week to Myrtle Beach.
Oh.
And will not quarantine upon return.
What? Well, I'm still laughing at the white man that got thrown off the plane at the American Airlines plane, and I heard the white woman, because I know I know her name was Becky, or Kaylee or whatever, about not having to wear the face mask because of her medical condition. But you know what? I'm so tired of people, and they bullshit about not wearing the mask, and thank you for telling me, because I've been so underbury with helping people with their unemployment and school this week that I missed our governor saying, fuck all y'all motherfuckers. I'm tired of the bullshit. And when I say fuck y'all, he's talking Orange County, Riverside County, and Ventura, but mostly Orange County. Since y'all don't know how to act since you are children, I'm just going to say, fuck it. The state of California, all y'all got to wear masks because you guys don't know how to act. So thank you for letting me know, because I ordered more face masks just when we were when we were talking this morning, when we were texting, because I had no clue in my own state. That's just how buried I've been for the past couple of days with school and work. I had no clue about the fact that it was mandated that the entire state of California, we now have to wear masks. I love it. It's about time.
It should have been enacted time. 3 months ago.
We were talking about, you know, potential lawsuits out in Oklahoma. Here's an interesting wrinkle to it. A group of petitioners petitioned the Supreme Court of the state of Oklahoma to cancel Coronapalooza, or at least, okay, not cancel it, but to mandate that the maggots wear masks when they go into Coronapalooza so as to suppress the spread of viral particles. But, and this is, you know, this is how Republican ideas of governance work. The justices of the Oklahoma Supreme Court said, no, sorry, we're not going to do that because there aren't any mandates in the state's reopening plan. So because the governor of Oklahoma, a guy named Stitt, and the Oklahoma legislature refused to act responsibly, the Oklahoma Supreme Court said they didn't have to either. The ruling from the Supreme Court says petitioners cannot establish the necessary elements for a writ of mandamus, specifically that petitioners possess a clear legal right to the relief they seek. Jeez. Fucking assholes. And by the way, just for those keeping up, in Oklahoma yesterday, there were 450 new cases of COVID-19. Today, they've added 352 new cases of COVID-19. And it's not like they're testing worth the fuck. So in the 2 days leading up to Coronapalooza, they got over 800 brand new cases. And those are the ones they know about. There's no way to count the asymptomatic ones. And so a little bit ago, I got a graphic from a friend. CoronaFest, idiots welcome. Bunker Bitch, Saturday, June 20th, 2020. Moved from June 19th to look less racist. Free admission. Just make sure to sign a waiver in case you get the COVID. LOL. Bunker Bitch.
Hey, Bob, can we change the little R in the back of the name of these politicians from a R to an M for maggot? Can we just do that permanently, please?
It would suit me all the way down to the ground. And by the way, we got 30 minutes left in the program, and just to let folks know where we stand, we are at $340 bucks to go to finish fundraising for the week. If we could raise another $140, we would just have today to deal with, and a $400 hole on Monday. Whatever we can do toward making a little community-made miracle would be tremendous. So thanks to everybody who already has, and to anyone who wants to jump in now, it's much obliged, and I hate even talking about it, but I'd like for us to have a program in July too. I'm just funny that way. So there we are. You mentioned Juneteenth, and happy Juneteenth indeed. Let's go to Berkeley, California, shall we? Where an angry white man was caught tearing down protest signs in Berkeley and was captured of course, on video in the process of doing it. Wait a second. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get ahead of myself. Let's run over and fire up the stress line too. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hi, this is George in Coarse Gold, California.
Hey, George, welcome to the program. Bob. Sorry, I didn't mean to leave you hanging like that.
Well, that's okay. It's very, very entertaining. I just have a quick story. I went shopping up in Oakhurst, which is the southern gateway to Yosemite National Park, which they just opened. And did my shopping at the drugstore and the hardware store, and I went to the market. Nobody, you know, half the people didn't have masks. So I'm waiting to get into the market because there's a big crowd of people going in and out. And this one blonde woman looked straight at me, and she didn't have a mask on, and she was leaving. And I was just looking at everybody and shaking my head. Didn't acknowledge her or anything. Came out of the market.
You're breaking up some, George. We got...
She's like the supermarket monitor or something, saying I can't shake my head. I just said, fuck you. Walked away.
Wait, you couldn't... What? They took issue.
We lost about 30 seconds there, George.
She didn't want me to shake my head at her because she wasn't wearing a mask. So, well, I don't know. I just said, fuck you, and I left.
She got Brooklyn'd.
People are nuts. People are nuts right now.
Yeah, they are.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Hey, George, thanks, man. What? Thanks for sharing. Jesus. I find myself...
Well, they aren't just nuts right now. They've always been nuts. They're just showing us right now.
Yeah, I've been doing
because they feel free to because of Trump.
They scurried out from under the baseboards.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right. Yeah, the cockroaches are out and they're sunbathing now. The cockroaches are.
I do a lot of head shaking these days. So anyway, out in Berkeley, there were some protest signs put up today. And... a woman named Henriette Celestine posted on Facebook, as many of you know, I started to call a call to action to Chalk for Justice tomorrow, 6:20, because one of my neighbors complained about my kids and I chalking Black Lives Matter on the sidewalk. About an hour ago in my Berkeley neighborhood, my kids and I were doing some chalking when I noticed a white man ripped down my Chalk for Justice signs and ripped them up. I confronted him here and captured some of the interaction on video. Mind you, I'm pregnant and had my two toddlers with me. Fortunately, one of my white neighbors and another passerby jumped in and confronted the man as he walked away. This is why it's so important that everyone show their solidarity for Black Lives Matter. This is the kind of racist ignorance that's so pervasive still on Juneteenth in 2020. And so here, then, is the audio.
Because I want to, just like whoever put them up wanted to.
Yeah, I put them up. That's why I'm wondering why you're taking them down.
Well, I'm going to collect them all and take them all down.
Why is that?
Because I think it's obnoxious for you to preach to me and to everybody else. When we had a president for 8 years who was black, what the hell is the matter with you? Are you sick in the brain?
No. I'm not sure if you're aware of all the black men that are dying in this country right now.
Right.
At the hands of police brutality.
And there are many black men that are killing black men. That's the majority of the black men that get killed.
No, that's not the majority, actually. And if it wasn't an issue, then it wouldn't be a lot of protests and rioting. It's police killing black men unarmed.
You don't even know what the hell you're talking about.
I do.
And if you think that I wasn't upset to watch George get killed in front of us, you're wrong. That was about as obnoxious as I've heard.
Obnoxious.
But Black Lives Matter going around preaching... What a bunch of shit.
I would appreciate if you would watch your language in front of my children. And I'm not sure why you're opposed to Black Lives Mattering if you yourself are...
recording this, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Because I have no embarrassment over what I'm doing.
Okay, you should.
What you should be is embarrassed because you're holding up signs and you're marching down like you're a sorrowful and precious person.
No, it's not about being sorrowful or precious. It's about being angry that in this country still today, unarmed black people are killed every day at the hands of police.
You're full of shit. How do you know this?
Because I read the news and I read statistics.
I read the news too. Yeah, and the police are just bad guys. Why don't we defund them, take all their money away, and then have no cops? And then see how you live. I imagine if you have anything or anyone that you love, you're going to be in deep shit and be praying for the police to come back. What a dumbass chick you are.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Do you want to tell us your name for the camera?
Go fuck yourself. That's what I...
Thank you. I really appreciate the profanity in front of my children. Hope you have a wonderful day. I really...
Should we call him Marvin? Let's call him Marvin. Something like that.
Stay classy, fucker.
Yeah. How about MAGA Marvin?
MAGA Marvin, perfect. There you go.
And his name is Go Fuck Yourself, so that's a good name for him.
Sorry, I'm out of fucks to give.
Meanwhile, the loony ass mayor of Las Vegas declared today, Juneteenth, National Martini Day.
Oh, I heard about that.
Jesus Christ, clueless.
And then just down the street
Berkeley. Hold on. Stop. Did I just hear, I go in and out because I'm in the store and I didn't want you guys to hear me buying finally a Fair Life milk, finally, Bob. So did I just hear you say this person, because I said it's National Mark today, marking the end of the real end of slavery. It's National Martini Day?
No, the mostly end of slavery. There were two more states that still had to be freed on December
6th. Well, mostly end of slavery.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't with white people. I just...
Well, but the thing is, somebody put that horrible woman in office. So don't just hold her responsible for her bad actions. Hold responsible every fucking idiot in Las Vegas who voted for her. Because they own it all.
And therein lies the problem. Because this is why I don't get, as much as I hate Trump and get pissed off at Trump, it's the people who voted his skanky motherfucking ass in office in the first place. Those are the people, you stupid idiot. That's y'all. That person that was just going to blithely back out of his parking space and not see this big ass truck rolling down the parking lot.
You should have spotted the red hat, Tracy. Should have known.
You don't see many of those in Studio City.
No, you don't.
The people in Studio City who are Trump supporters, they keep their hats on the DL. You know, because they know that, you know, they're going to get the big time stink eye.
Right. Whereas Newport Beachers, I mean, they'll just have the frickin' banner on, you know, on their beachfront.
Oh yeah,
as obnoxious as possible. Because no more bullshit. That's his motto on his banners. No more bullshit.
Find time for him to stop.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I really want right now, you guys? And, you know, I've been doing really well with my weight loss. Hey, I don't know. Tomorrow's my weigh-in. But as of last week, I'm down another 2.6 pounds. But I really want cupcakes. I want a chocolate cupcake with buttercream frosting.
Well, I don't think this is going to speak to your sweet tooth, but I can tell you what's going to happen after the program's over. There's a little bit of daylight left. And it's not raining right now. You know,
What you gonna do on the grill there, Bob? What you gonna do?
I got those brioche buns. And ooh. I'm gonna go out and fire up the griddle, and I'm gonna paint the brioche buns with garlic butter spread and toast them that way. And then I've got some thin sliced smoked ham and I'm gonna heat that on the griddle with some milk and melt some cheese with it, put it on the bun with some pickles. and have a kind of a low rent Cubano, because I've also got some leftover pulled pork, and I think I'm gonna make a couple of Cubano sandwiches.
Okay, see, no, it doesn't speak to my sweet tooth, but it does speak to the fact that since I slept most of the day, I is kind of hungry, and that's why I think I'm craving stupid right now. But yeah, no, there's a bakery, and if they're open, I might have to swing through there. It's called Susie's Cakes, and they make the most delicious stuff. And it's so not good for you, but you know what? I have zero fucks to give right about now.
Yeah, just do it.
That was the little devil that lives on your shoulder, Tracy. Just do yeah, it.
It's just right now, you know, I have been particularly good with what I've been doing with my food and stuff like that. And I'm, you know what? I don't care. I mean, I care. I do care. And if my body does recover tonight, and if I plan on going to bed early, tomorrow's my 10-mile run tomorrow morning. So,
you'll run it. You'll run it off. And the other reason for my hot my hillbilly Cubano sandwich is because I've got this pot of extremely bougie mustard that Chris in Germany sent along, and I'm just itching to try it. So a little mustard, the grilled garlic bread, the hot ham, cheese, the smoky pulled pork. How can that not be a win?
I think it's a necessity there. I think you must, and you must do that.
And the thing is, you guys do this to me because I hadn't been thinking about that. That just dawned on me in the course of this conversation, and I don't know why. But I do need to send out thanks. Big, big thanks to Henry and to Catton, Ohio. I can announce that we are down to $190 to go to finish the week. That is amazing. From 615 down to 190, and it's official. I'm calling it a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. A community-made Friday on the Front Porch miracle. So that's tremendous, and if we knock down the other 190 between now and 18 minutes from now, that would be, well, I don't know, we'd probably have to, like, you know, build a shrine or something. And let's see, a couple of other notes. Cynthia, and are there going to be evangelical preacher men at the Corona-palooza to pray the virus away? I'm sure that'll work real good. Oh yeah, yell real loud and let's get the choir going. Cynthia also suggesting after this thing's over, lock them all up inside the box center, quarantine them inside the building for the next 3 weeks or so, all of them. I'm sure it'll work out very well for them. So, who bobbed me?
I did. Bob, Bob, Bob.
Oh,
now,
Steve.
There's a patent on that. I just copyright.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? But right. To the stress line caller's point, people in Georgia are losing their mind. Karen came home yesterday, white as a sheet. I knew something was wrong. After 24 years being married to somebody, mm-hmm. You can read them, you know? And I said, baby, what's wrong? You know where Interstate 400 is, don't you, Bob?
I'm sure you're Georgia 400? Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Somebody in a red pick-em-up truck with those big fucking tires had crossed the median and was coming at her full bare, at least 60 miles an hour, flashing the lights at her like she was doing something wrong. And if somebody – she wouldn't have had a space to throw her car into, I'd be a widower today, man. People are literally losing their fucking minds, man.
Jeez.
You know, it's kind of why I had to bounce yesterday.
Jesus, that's terrifying.
Yeah, man.
A few years, well, a lot of years back now, my aunt and uncle were traveling. I think they were on I-64. They lived in Virginia Beach. And some asshole launched across the median and took them head on. So I know exactly why that was so terrifying to Ms. Karen. Jesus. So, I mean, was there any resolution, or did she just get the fuck away and be glad that she did?
She just got the fuck away and glad that she was able to do so, and other people had to ditch their cars, too. So I don't know what his point was, but he was in a big red truck with the big tires. I bet you if you drill down, he's probably a maggot, pissed off, not paying attention.
Oh, sure.
He probably saw a Black Lives Matter bumper sticker and lost control of his vehicle.
Yeah, she was just glad to be alive.
That happened to me one time. I was driving down the road. My wife called and said, there's some idiot driving the wrong way. And I said, yeah, there's hundreds of them.
I don't like to do this kind of thing very often because I don't want to ruin anybody's day. But I remember probably a year or so ago, I turned out onto US 19, which is a huge. It's just a tourist throughway, and I was driving southbound toward the New River Gorge Bridge, and son of a gun, I see these lights where lights shouldn't be, and it's some idiot in the southbound lane driving northbound,
yeah,
and passed me like it was a two-lane road. And, you know, maybe I was wrong. I don't think I was. I picked up the phone, called 911, and said, you got a northbound car in the southbound lane. Somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, I saw blue lights back behind me. And, and again, I don't feel bad about that. Because, you know, what if family with kids in car or school bus, because, you know, that's happened. That happened in Kentucky a few years ago.
Yeah.
Drunk asshole took out an entire school bus.
Jeez. Yeah, you've got to make those calls because you don't know, you know, somebody like that's a true menace on the roadways. And somebody's really drunk, you know, you got to do the same thing too, you know?
But what you don't do
is call the cops when somebody's asleep in the car in the drive-through out of restaurant.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you don't call the cops if somebody's like bird watching and they happen to be, you know, have darker colored skin than you do, you know, in Central Park.
But the question also has to be asked is whether or not that call for the wrong way driver needs to be armed with a taser and a sidearm and a shotgun mounted into the cop car and all the rest of it, or is there somebody else that should be the first responder to that incident?
I know John's in the group. Hey, John, tell them about the news story you sent me about the brand new Giganto what the fuck vehicle that a town of 8,400 people just got in West Virginia.
Yeah, what's up with that, man?
And the worst part of that is the bad, horrible, terrible, really awful journalism involved. A young woman, cub reporter, probably recently graduated from Ohio U. She's got it in her bio. And she does this glowing story for a TV station about Moundsville, West Virginia, where the prison used to be, but it isn't there anymore. It really devastated the community when the prison went away. But they just got him a brand new MRAP. You know.
Why? For what?
Right. You know, because of all the IEDs in Moundsville, right?
Right.
No, Bob, it's the Antifa.
Yeah, it's in case of the Antifa. But the fact of the matter is, this terrible little cub reporter was just all agog. And you know what? The Moundsville city government got it for free, not a penny. And I'll be explaining all about it later on our evening newscast.
Right there, she's trying to be contrarian to the defunct police. She's trying to brainwash, but she's trying to go against the defund the police movement. Basically, she's trying
free. They got this giant piece of junk from the Marine Corps, and the thing is, it's going to cost them a fortune to maintain it. You know, here's a free tank. The upkeep's a bit of a bear. Right? Yeah. And so that's exactly what it was, John. Was it you who said that's a classic case of manufacturing consent?
Yeah, somebody on there tweeted, they're like, all right, so if I ever have to explain to somebody again about manufacturing consent, I'm going to go to this very tweet. And I was like, yep, there you go.
It's enough to make you eat dirt and run rabbits. It is.
John and Bob.
Wait, I got a thank you to send out. Thomas, our buddy Jug of Punch of long standing, took us down to only $90 to go to finish the week. Thank you, Thomas. Thomas said,
finish the week? As in, we got ourselves a bona fide miracle?
Yep, we got us a community-made miracle. Only $90 to go to finish the week. And Thomas said, thanks for a rocker on the front porch. And have an extra $5 for the PayPal fees. And then talking about going the wrong way on the highway, Thomas adds, Bob, that's how I lost my brother. So, you know, that's an integral part of the conversation about what defund the police means. It doesn't mean close down all the police departments like that poor benighted idiot in Berkeley seemed to think. And America is water-boweled shitting itself over the idea of, well, there ain't going to be no police and we're going to get overrun by them. The Antifa, Al-Qaeda, but that's not what anybody's talking about, that I can tell.
Aren't those the head-lopping, isn't that the head-lopping group?
The head-loppers, the head-loppers, and the blue helmet UN people, and they're going to come and take away our freedom, because of what's in the Constitution.
And it's the Jade Helm.
Oh, I've done forget it, the Jade Helm. and the Obama, the Obama theme, they're going to send us all to the Obama FEMA re-edumacation camps.
Oh, jeez.
All of us.
Don't forget about the overly melanin gangs.
Yes. Don't forget them.
That's them. That's them Obama paramilitary forces. We done seed the video of them all singing their Obama songs a few year ago.
On their Obama phones?
Yes. Wake up, sheeple.
Black helicopters matter. No way.
Oh, and speaking of that, by the way, Jeremy with a note said, don't feel bad, Horn family. A local high school here in Vermont has decided to fly the BLM flag, and all the crazies have come out screaming things from, like, you're destroying my history. And I'm sorry, I have to use the redneck accent. My Vermont accent sucketh. And then it's, oh, it's a racist flag. All lives matter. Black people kill more black people. You can't fly that flag with the American flag. It's illegal. My freedom of speech been taken away. You're the problem. And then, of course, Hillary's behind all of this.
It's in the constipation.
That's in the constipation. Right there next to Pursuit of Happiness. Jesus.
Hey, John, that West Virginia tank, is it solar powered at least?
Yeah, no.
No?
No. Not even a little bit.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Let me ask a question. Suddenly occurred to me, and this is another reason why we can't have nice things because of lawyers, but you know, it occurs to me, if you think about the posse comitatus, the forget the actual origins of the law, but
the racist origins of the law, yes.
Right. But the purpose is to not have, or to not only not have military, but to only have local police enforcing laws. I wonder if there's an argument that you could make that selling those and it's from the Marines, so we know it's military gear. If that actually,
hell, I'd run it up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes. I know where you're going. If that's a violation of posse comitatus,
yeah,
de facto militarizing the police. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and see, and history's always everything, Steve. So you got to take into account, you know, there, posse comitatus gets passed at a time when individual companies had their own armies, okay? Their mm-hmm. own thugs. We called them, the particular agency that was well-known in southern West Virginia was the Baldwin Felts Detective Agency, and they were just called the Baldwin Thugs. Now, what's interesting is that eventually the state government gets around to outlawing the Baldwin Thugs at the same time that they create a little outfit called the West Virginia State Police. Guess where all the outlawed Baldwin Thugs went to work?
Gee, I wonder.
Yeah, the West Virginia State Police. But you had, you had railroad cops, all manner of industrial cops. And all of this is happening at the time that Posse Comitatus is passed, and the only thing that gets outlawed is the use of the American military for law enforcement purposes, but not the hired gun thugs of the Gilded Age gazillionaire class. So at that time, there was no highway system, just pretty much just the railroad and the rivers.
Sure.
And so if you want to be one of those fat, dead Tony Scalia originalists, there shouldn't be any highway patrols or state police. There can only be a militia, a well-regulated militia. But, you know, their originalism doesn't go that far because, of course, they're little cop fanboys. But I think there's all kinds of posse comitatus implications along the way, because policing, what, the first official police force was in Philadelphia, and I'm not sure what year. But you know, they were race enforcers. They were all the origin of all police is in white supremacist, racist, skull cracking enforcement. And thus has it ever been.
And that
been.
Was today's Black History Moment, people.
Well,
okay. Slave patrols, right?
Well, not always. In the South, it was slave patrols. In the North, those militias were largely, and they evolved into law enforcement, were used to pursue and perpetuate the genocide of Native people.
Right.
First police force, New York City, 1844.
There you go.
Actually, I'm looking at something that says it was Boston in 1838.
Okay, I see one here, too.
I got my cupcake.
Yay, cupcake. And thank you to Will in Chicago. Will just took us down to $65 to go to finish the week. This is officially a community-made miracle on Friday on the front porch. Thank you, everyone. That's tremendous.
I'll go finish it up then for you, Bob. Then 60. Okay, so I got. How much do you need for to finish everything off?
$65. Yeah.
So then I'll do a $32.50 challenge. So I got $32.50 on it. Anybody wants to match that, then it'll be finished for the rest of the week.
Tracy, right? In solidarity, I'll match it. So it's
there
done.
You go.
Awesome.
So, good. Yeah.
I'll be dipped. So there it is. So there it is.
There it is.
A Juneteenth, Friday on the front porch, community made miracle.
And without going into overtime.
And we have to end it right now. So I can go make my Cubano sandwich. By the way, I got a snarky little note from Flavio saying, "Do you ever hear of cholesterolemia, Bob? Not only have I heard of it, Flavio, I've got it. That's why I take the meds I take." But you know, it's not an everyday thing.
Bob, I have to say one last thing, if that's all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have to go in front of the whole community. I still feel horrible about what
happened. I knew you were going to do this.
What happened? What, Steve?
I sent Bob some masks, but I found this. There's a German deli up near me, and they have one of the things they had was it was uncured bacon jam with bourbon and maple. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And apparently,
those are the best smelling masks I've ever been near.
I mean, can you use them? Please tell me that.
Yeah. They're plastic wrap. They'll clean up, and they smell real pretty.
Oh, the same box, Steve.
Yeah,
fine folks at UPS just couldn't resist playing a little flag football with the box, and the jar didn't make it.
I should have marked it fragile.
It's amazing.
They don't understand Italian, though. So.
They don't give a shit. Do you send it UPS, Steve?
Yeah.
You should have sent it to the postal service. Yeah.
Well, sometimes you put fragile on and they treat it rougher just to see if they can break it.
Of course.
Or I should have put it in bubble wrap is probably what I should have done. But
no, you should.
I felt horrible.
Going forward, you only use the U.S. Postal Service because Tracy went down this road. Tracy got absolutely run roughshod over by UPS in terms of costs, sending that wonderful pineapple apricot jam, and then found out it was like, what, a third of the cost and half of the time to get it here with the USPS?
Yes. It took 3 days to get to you, and it cost me like $12 or something like that, as opposed to like damn near, I could have donated a kidney for less money, you know.
She could have bought a Hawaiian pineapple, some fine California apricots, flown out here, made it, and flown back for less than UPS charged.
That part.
Don't get Carol started on UPS.
Has anyone told the maggots this? Has anyone told the maggots that if they're going to get rid of the post office, they're going to pay $10 to send grandma a birthday card?
No, yeah. A maggot hat.
Or a maggot hat, yeah.
Yeah, and you're right, Roger.
$20 to send that fucking thing.
Yeah. You're right, Roger. The same day that Steve's package went sideways, or into a million tiny pieces, as the case may be, Carol Baker said she would shoot on sight the first UPS brown shirt that showed up on her porch ever again.
I remember that.
The United States Holy Postal God. Service, Bob, as we know, the USPS is excellent at damage control. I'll tell that story at a later time, but we experienced it firsthand.
Well, see, Carol was so hot because there is life-sustaining medication that her son must have.
Good God.
And two times in a row, it has to be refrigerated the whole way. And two times in a row, they've let it sit around over in Lenexa, Kansas, and get all real nice and hot.
Jesus.
Oh, see, that's no.
When the pharmacy is like 20 miles away.
Right.
Well, I'll squeeze it in real quick. I sent Bob a package. They accidentally sent it to Jacksonville, Florida. I'm in Georgia. But they still made it to his resident on time and as promised. Oh, now, that's some fine damage control there.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, definitely.
They caught up with it, figured out, well, wait a minute.
This is the wrong zip code.
Wait a minute, because this is almost like Tuesday now. Hey, West Virginia ain't nowheres near the beach.
Do you think Biden should talk about that? Do you think Biden should talk about taking cannabis off the Schedule One? I mean, are there things that
you gotta weigh that? All those issues you have to weigh between the value they would have in motivating our side versus the value they would have for negative messaging on the other side. I think the national consensus on cannabis is probably significant enough that him saying, listen, we just need to legalize this nationally.
Take it off. I mean,
all this states' rights bullshit and just make it legal nationally.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Bob.
Well, yeah, okay. Go ahead, Steve.
There's just a news report on CNN that the mayor of Tulsa rescinded the curfew.
Oh, fuck. He took it away?
Yep.
Yeah, so the maggots can then go out and party.
Oh, and they can make a maggot. Oh,
man. So, is, they no,
so,
wanna,
so,
they
look.
Wanna, so, hey, hey. So they want another red summer. So, hey, they missed the 100-year anniversary in 2019 for the 100-year anniversary of the Red Summer. So they're like, fuck it. Let's just do a 101.
Well,
okay.
Motherfuckers. Exactly, Tracy. And this goes to something that Lou was asking me to go into a few days ago. I keep saying that the maggot states are doing everything in their power to turn COVID into a bioweapon. And this is that. All these instances of lax, you know, we don't have very many COVID cases in West Virginia, but thanks to Myrtle fucking Beach, we're going to have a blow up here. And thanks to this goddamn maggot rally in Tulsa, it's going to blow through the roof wherever it is that these little maggots are going home to, because you know they're not all in Tulsa.
No,
not to mention Florida.
No,
did you see Florida,
back
Bob?
To Massachusetts.
Yeah, one's going back to Massachusetts. Florida's exactly.
Insane. Yeah,
and Texas.
Florida
is on fire.
Florida just had, I think, 4,000 new cases in one day.
You know, the motherfuckers are coming back here to California. Come on.
Those are like New York numbers. 4,000 in a day. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, that's why they're saying
it's going to be the new hotspot.
Yep. It's going to be the new New York.
Is. Yeah.
Oh, before you go, Bob, I just have to mention my Amy Mighty White of her Klobuchar saying, well, you know, I think it's time that a woman of color needs to be, you know, on the ticket. Bitch, you knew as soon as this whole thing came down in Minnesota, your ass was trashed. You was not going to be the presumptive. Come on. And so you just had to put it out there so you could say face.
He said face.
Hey, after everything.
She went on Lawrence O'Donnell last night and said she called Biden on Wednesday night and told him.
She's not doing it because, you know, for the sake of the party. She's doing it to save her ass. You know,
she is doing it to save her next election.
Her Senate. Yes.
Well, Lawrence O'Donnell even asked her if her history as a DA had any bearing on her decision.
Oh, no. And, no, of course not. Yeah.
That's sticking the knife in a little bit.
Well, Lawrence isn't afraid to ask a hard question or two. Hey, y'all, listen, and for anybody else listening who wants to jump in, go over to headon.live, click on the button. For the after party, if there's going to be one, I just have to shut things down now so that I can get fire up the griddle for dinner and, well, get the upload done. But the conversation will continue. I want to thank everybody for joining in on what turned out to be a fantastic and vibrant Friday on the Front Porch conversation. They so often are, and for the commemorative Juneteenth Friday on the Front Porch, Community Made Miracle. Thank you all so very, very much. It's nice to know that we've got a fighting chance for July now. Of course, this has been month by month for 16 years. So all I can do is thank you from the bottom of my heart and the bottom of our heart for those of you who make this program possible for everybody else. Thank you so much, because it still runs about one person out of every 100 who listens who kicks into the program. Thank you so much. By the way, a note coming from Shorty in L.A. I've boycotted FedEx since they fucked over those brothers for telling the truth. And adds, my neighbor screamed and cried when she saw the news. She's stopping at the hospital to get COVID tested. Why? She just flew in from a funeral in Florida, and it was on the news at LAX. They have weaponized the fucking virus. There is a bioterrorist war being waged against the decent people of the United States by these godforsaken maggot governors and the people who refuse to try to slow the spread of the disease. I'm not wrong about this. So thank all of you for keeping the program on the air. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the old holler tree and in the chat room. Thank you to Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Malloy comes your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, only 50 minutes away. This is the best place to make sure you get the fresh program. Thanks to Mike for letting us run the program here. And remember, now more than ever, stay home if you possibly can. This thing is about to roar up. This thing's going to go into overdrive. No matter what Mike Pence says, there is no second wave. You freaking lying, evangelical Christian. Stay home. Stay safe. If you have to go out, wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask. Wear your gloves. And for the love of anything that you hold sacred, if you see someone in a red hat or a Trump t-shirt or has a Trump sticker on their car or a Trump flag or a grab me by the whatever, if there's anything that makes you think you've got a maggot coming toward you, avoid them like the plague, because they are. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later. And now it's raining. There went my sandwich. Damn it. See ya.